This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. It's Monday. It's a little, as Clark Griswold said in Christmas Vacation, it's a little nipply out. Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day today. The Manitoba Building Trades pregame show live from Boss Pizza City Place with Mr. Kevin Olszewski and friends starts at 6 o'clock tonight. Winnipeg Jets host the Minnesota Wild live from Bell MTS Place at 7, and the Huron Windows postgame show will be live from Boston Pizza City Place as well. It is game day, first of the preseason, first of four this week for the Winnipeg Jets as it all gets started. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers return to the practice field as well. They'll host the Ottawa Redblacks on Friday night. Some Major League Baseball teams are making the postseason. Training camps are well underway. The NFL had week two, lots to get to today, and of course we are going to qualify two more people for our hockey nights in Vegas. Ian Mendez, Dennis Bayak, Marshall Ferguson, Jonathan Davis all going to join us, and then an hour of your phone calls to break down what was a busy, busy sports weekend. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you here on a Monday morning. Gentlemen, how are we? How was the weekend?
Weekend was good. Played a couple of soccer games with the toque and gloves on. I mean, holy smackers. Friday and then early yesterday. It was just a wee bit chilly out there. And took Trey and four of his buddies, or three of his buddies. I guess four. We had five kids in total. Myself and a buddy and five little monkeys to Jets Fan Fest on Saturday. And it was absolutely spectacular. A great move to go inside, of course, with the weather this year, the way it was. And the weather last year was the same. It was cold and windy as heck, and things were shut down sort of outside because of it. But what the Jets did, True North did, in bringing it inside, having two of the arenas expanded into areas, and it was just absolutely fantastic. The kids had a blast. We were in there for a solid 4 hours. And they were just going like it was full monkey. They had one arena that was specific for kids and had all the bouncy things and the obstacle courses and the combine stuff that you could do. Well done to True North. It was a lot of fun.
Bouncy castle?
Did you go in? A few of them. I did not. No, I was carrying food, drinks. You know, well, you don't. I don't know if you know the way it is, but it's you're as exhausted. Yeah. You're as exhausted as the kids when you get home. You just sit down here like I'm never moving again. I'm just going to sit here.
How's your weekend, Mr. Rewicki?
Well, first off, if you have a death wish, you get into that bouncy castle. That's first things first. Like, I mean, that's bouncy castle 101 right there. Mine was a little less eventful than that. I just kind of took it easy. Just chilled a little bit. Nothing too crazy.
That's very nice. Yeah, yeah. How'd we do in the six-pack?
Well, it was one for one.
I went one for one. I kind of focus on myself, to be honest.
Yeah, I need to look and find out what your games got. What games you guys? Do you know how you did?
I had Dallas beating Denver in Denver, beating the spread.
Okay,
so I took it on the chin, literally there.
Yeah,
much like the Cowboys did. And then I think my other game was,
I think you had Carolina, right?
Carolina, and of course Carolina was favored by 7.5, and they win a 1986 Jets Seahawks game, 6-3, 9-3. So,
tough one.
Yeah, I've had it with Cam Newton and the offense. Great defense in Carolina, as I thought, but Greg Olsen broke his foot. Oh, well, we could have every excuse we wanted, actually, but there is no excuse when you're playing Buffalo. The line of the week was on our own station in our during those commercial breaks when we have their NFL promo, and that guy came on and he said, take the Panthers. Buffalo beat the New York Jets, but so could you and 10 of your closest friends. So I really thought that at home in the home opener, the Carolina Panthers would win by 10 minimum. So I was 0 for 2. And I'm still waiting for Jordan Howard to get me a point in fantasy football. I'll wait till the next weekend, I guess.
Well, rough six-pack start you've had, but you can always lean on your Bears for support.
There we go. I should have picked that spread. That was a big one.
Yeah, what was it, minus 30?
Santa Lucia, Winnipeg Jets game day. As we said, the Jets start tonight versus the Minnesota Wild. We have the lineups here. Eric Comrie, Connor Hellebuck are going to get the start in net. There is that NHL rule where 8 veterans have to start in every preseason game. So some that will be taking place tonight include Patrick Laine, Mark Scheifele, Matthew Perreault will all be in the lineup this evening against Minnesota. Kyle Connor will play tonight. As will Brendan Lemieux. We'll get into more of the lineup. But
what a weird rule, gentlemen. Why do we think that rule exists?
Well, it's to keep teams from dressing like 22 AHL players to get a look at them. It's to sell preseason tickets.
Like, you're not going to go to the game if the Wild, or I guess if the Jets at home, ice no one.
Totally to sell preseason tickets. And just interesting that such a rule is in effect. You know, I find it really intriguing. That's
well, I agree with this rule because remember a couple of years ago when the Flames and the Coyotes played here? And the problem is teams for their preseason take care of their home fans. Mm-hmm. So literally there was back-to-back games for the Flames. They came in and Dion Phaneuf played, and I believe that was it. And the next night back home,
probably needed it.
Jerome Iginla, Mika Kiprusoff, all the names that. And my point to this is there wasn't NHL here at the time. And if you're going to play back-to-back preseason games, and your Flames fans are going to see these guys all year long, why don't you dress these guys for a neutral city that might want to come out and see some NHL stars? And they didn't. And I think that is one of the main rules on why they have to dress 8 veterans. But we'll get into more of the lineup and everything else. Training camp's underway. We're going to hear from Dustin Byfuglien at the bottom of the hour, Paul Maurice as well, here on the Big Show, TSN 1290. But your early thoughts, it gets started right away. Great stuff from Paul Maurice, I thought, on Friday, talking about what do you have to fix the most, and he gets into defensive play and how it's a skill and how we're developing that, and it takes a little bit slower time. Josh Morrissey, he discussed Dustin Byfuglien and their relationship. And then it gets started tonight. And I guess, you know, it's preseason, so you don't expect much. But, hey, guys, Kyle Connor's in the lineup. Brendan Lemieux's in the lineup, as is Line A. This is what I look forward to in the preseason is, like, Kyle Connor, Brendan Lemieux. How far have you come? Where are you at? No, not so much as, you know, if Patrick Laine or Perreault don't light it up tonight, I'm not too concerned. I'm more looking at the younger players.
Yeah, all I do typically for preseason games, because it really doesn't matter what 55 or 29 do out there for the most part, although there'll probably be some level of fireworks that we'll have all kinds of fun with. But I like to isolate players basically on each line or defensive pairing and just watch them specifically, the younger cats trying to make the break in. So I always enjoy watching preseason games, it's going to be fun. And just the smell to go into the MTS Center, that smell, right? And it's just back. We're right on the this time of year, early October. This is such a fantastic time of year where you have all these different things going on with the boys taking back to the ice and looking forward to get it going.
Yeah, I mean, it's the first preseason game. I just don't know how much you're going to get out of it. 5-on-5 wise, for me at least. I mean, like, especially because the Wild are kind of coming in tonight as the sacrificial lamb in a way, where they're, you know, the Jets are icing close to a game, you know, like opening night roster, and Minnesota's not doing the same thing. So I'm going to look solely on special teams because you have very limited time. I mean, there's only, I think 17 days until the season starts. Mm-hmm. So if you're Paul Maurice, you have basically no time at all to work on 5-on-4 and 4-on-5 in an actual game setting. Like, you have zero time to get that done. So I would imagine that the Jets, for the most part, are what we see out there on the power play is going to be what we see to start opening night against the Maple Leafs. So I'm just intrigued to see how they roll that way, because the way that they kind of tilted their lines through the first couple of practices, I don't think it's how any of us kind of expected it to shake out. Like, it was a little bit of changes throughout all four lines, really. So I'm intrigued to see if that kind of plays itself out when it comes to the power play and also with the penalty kill, just to see how that kind of rolls out a little bit, although we're not going to get a total sense of that because you don't have Kulikov and Byfuglien playing together, and Enstrom's with Poolman. So I guess I would say probably the power play. How does the power play look, and who is out there? Who's Maurice's first choice to be the first five?
Well, and I'll take this a little deeper just about training camp itself. Other than those five spots that Paul Maurice talked about, we know who's on this team, and special teams-wise, we know who's on this team. That's what they struggle with. From the preseason as a whole, is this what, you know, maybe they should be doing, is just focusing on this for all of the exhibition games, like just making sure that you have at least one of your units that you're going to use out there and give them the time to sort of get at this and get that early. And what I mean by that is, like, if this is your first on paper and your second power play, and this is your number one penalty killing unit, this is your number two, make sure that every game that maybe your second penalty kill's in there and your top power play, and you just let them work it out in this preseason. Or do you think that it is what it is, practice time is what it is, and sort of just you go with your lineup and see who gets comfortable? I know veterans like to 3 to 4 preseason games. That's about it. And this is a veteran-heavy lineup tonight. Blake Wheeler's also playing, Nick Ehlers. Joel Armia's out there, Mark O'Dano, Mark Scheifele, Matthew Perreault, as I said, Adam Lowry, Brian Little's going to play tonight. So do you sort of spend this? You know, if you give your veterans 4 preseason games of the 7, do you just solely work on this?
I don't think you have the personnel to do so. Like, when you're looking at tonight and there's no Morrissey, there's no Trouba, right? So imagining that they're going to be emphasized big time in the PK, that sort of blows that notion out of the water. And I suppose you can, looking at their lineup for the power play, but that's a great question. And you would like to see that for sure, right? Just for the cohesion and for the little bit more chemistry and the attention to detail that needs to go into the special teams, you'd think you'd like to utilize the early preseason games here to sort of just let that really gel and take hold. But with some of the in and outs of the lineups over the preseason, you wonder if they're going to have the personnel to truly do that.
But I don't think Morrissey or Trouba would have been on the first power play regardless. So
not power play, but penalty kill.
Penalty
right?
kill, yeah. Penalty kill is going to be complete. And even Murray said, you know, Byfuglien was a fill-in last year. He's not going to be a PK guy for the team. And that's going to limit his minutes as well. But as far as power play goes, yeah, I can't really disagree with you. Give him 90 seconds. Give him 130 on of the 2 minutes, and just let them acclimate themselves as much as possible. I know you want the second unit to get some work as well, and maybe you have it work out where they're kind of featured in a different game as the number one unit is, you know, completely off the ice. But that's kind of priority number one here. Like, you want to find out about some of these other guys, but at the same time, what makes your team the best against the Maple Leafs opening night? That's kind of your singular focus here. So I would have no problem if Laine, Wheeler, Scheifele, and name your other two players out there and they play 85% of the power play time tonight. I think that's a pretty effective use of trying to coach and get these guys familiar with each other.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting for sure. How much weight do you guys put in the preseason?
Not very much at all.
Yeah. I mean, especially results-wise. Like, if you're going to look at it through the prism of wins and losses, that's the most foolish thing to do. I think you look for me, it's for the bubble guys mostly, and just to see if there's been any market improvement from their games in previous years to this one.
And that's why in watching these games, like, the result, I don't really care about. Unless it's horrible, right, then I would attach a little bit more attention to that. But that's why I think it's important in preseason games, similar to how the coaching staff will break down the film after the game, isolate. You know, pick a player that you're interested in who's on the ice and really truly isolate, especially the young guys looking to make an impact, and see what they do when they're out there.
The defense corps tonight will include Tucker Poolman, Ben Chiarot, Dustin Byfuglien, Toby Enstrom, Nelson Noje, and Mr. Logan Stanley will be your defenseman in tonight's Preseason action on a Santa Lucia Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN 1290. More from the Jets, Mr. Dustin Buffalo, Mr. Paul Maurice throughout the morning today. We'll talk some NFL and Major League Baseball as well. But up next, the Bombers return to the practice field today, host the Ottawa Redblacks on Friday. We'll talk about that and the week that was in the CFL when we come back to the Big Show. TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood and Brandon Ruwicki, weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki with you. Monday, Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Puck drops tonight at 7. Kevin Olszewski has your full pre- and post-game coverage as well. We'll get into more of that. TSN 1290 and Clay Oven East Indian Restaurants present Caring for Kids. Support the staff and services of the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba today. Text KIDS to 129090. Standard message rates may apply. Every time you do, Clay Oven East Indian Restaurants will donate $1 to the Children's Hospital, up to $1,000. Your actions can help the Children's Hospital keep caring for kids across Manitoba. Kids like Michaela, who is currently battling cancer. For more on Caring for Kids, visit TSN1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon with you once again, and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers return to the practice field after their bye week. Fan Fest was yesterday at Investors Group Field. Heard from a couple people. It was a great event. A lot of the players out there, or all of the players out there, as they get back at it today. They host the Ottawa Redblacks this Friday. Ian Mendez from TSN 1200 in Ottawa is going to join us at 7, maybe get more on the Drew Tate injury, but it doesn't look good. And the Ottawa Redblacks could be coming in here with their third-string quarterback, and then there's also reports that Trevor Harris might only miss a week to 2 weeks, or could be up to 6. So not really knowing which quarterback to prepare for, but more on the 8-3 Bombers as they return to practice this week to really kick off the last third of the season.
Yeah, you can expect... I believe strongly you can expect Ryan Lindley to be the starter for Ottawa when they come in here. Drew Tate with the shoulder. If it's in a sling, it's just real hard for me to imagine a situation where it's 6 days of healing and then you're playing in a game. And Trevor Harris, by all accounts, should be at least missing another week. So the Bombers might get a little bit lucky here with Ryan Lindley coming in. There's a fair amount of controversy in the CFL this week, and especially with the earlier games, with and specifically the end of the Edmonton game, in seeing just the way things sort of transformed there against Toronto, a couple sort of ticky-tack pass interference calls, but then another absolute headshot on Mike Riley to end the game in what was a very critical play, similar to the week previous in the game that that Edmonton had against Calgary. And this one, the head ref is standing right there. And I've said this for years here in the CFL, where the refs just do not call helmet shots or head-to-head shots. And the crown of the helmet coming in, it wasn't a flagrant. This one wasn't flagrant to Mike Riley, but there's no doubt whatsoever the crown of the helmet of the Toronto player contacting the mask of Mike Riley, and it was a real good shot and not a flag, nothing at all. So it's just amazing. And then a brutal headshot in the game with Calgary on Jerome Messam, where Jerome Messam is going down and a BC player comes in from behind leading with his head, and like that should be a suspension. And just an unbelievable situation over the weekend where the refs are, and the league in general, right, just taking all these strides towards player safety. And there's an issue in this league with headshots. I think that there's been one for years. Anytime the head comes into contact, flags have got to fly, and the CFL refs absolutely must wake up with this.
Yeah, it's terrible. And it's not even, I mean, the Riley one's not even a 50-50. The guy comes in, and he doesn't get low for a second. If anything, he stays basically as upright as possible, I would assume, for the sole purpose of making... Like, I don't even know why you would try and tackle somebody like that unless you're trying to make head-to-head contact. And the referee, I mean, unless you want him to be millimeters away from Riley's chin, I don't know how you can have him in better position. It's just... I don't know. I mean, if you're the CFL, do you want this to be a priority or not? Like, do you want to have what we had 2 or 3 years ago where there was basically one starting quarterback in the league that was somewhat healthy and upright, and you had second and third stringers throwing the pill around, getting it picked off, and 15, 12 games all over the... Like, I don't know. Like, do you want to protect your superstars or not? It seems like a pretty basic set of guidelines that you should have here where... Never mind just Mike Riley, but any quarterback takes a shot up near and above the neck, it's an easy penalty, and maybe you got to start kicking guys out or something. Like you have to kind of escalate the punishment here, because as of right now, there's no real penalty for any of these players when they take what is realistically a dirty hit at a vulnerable player.
When I was watching the Hamilton-Saskatchewan game on Friday, and a player from the Tiger Cats was ejected for spitting. And when I saw that hit, I thought, well, like, you can kick guys out, and I know spitting's spitting and should get, but I mean, there seems to be this reluctance around it and this argument for it. It wasn't too long ago where Troy Aikman was even going off about if your hand brushed a quarterback's helmet, it was penalized. Mm-hmm. Even as he was falling,
that's
and he was trying to
case.
Keep his balance. Well, and last night in the Green Bay game, I saw Aaron Rodgers turn into what I thought was a horrific headshot, but the guy drove into his chest and then came up, so I thought it was a good non-call.
Was that the lateral?
Yeah, I think so. Like when he sort of turned and it was there, but it started at his chest and then it went up and it got his face mask and stuff, and I thought that's a good non-call. But I agree with you. I think the headshots in the CFL are – the problem I have with it is they're just blatant, like that one on Mike Riley where it's a pretty easy call. You're going out of your way not to call it, in my mind. We'll have more on the Bombers as we get through the week, of course. Manuk Dencher Blue Bomber game day on Friday as well. And we'll get into, as they return to practice, hear more from them. And we'll get the thoughts on the Red Blacks coming to town. Up next, we'll hear from Mr. Dustin Byfuglien as Winnipeg Jets head into a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day tonight here, right here on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Wild in the first preseason action for the Jets this evening at Bell MTS Place, 7 o'clock puck drops. Complete pregame coverage on the Manitoba Building Trades pregame show live from Boston Pizza City Place. Puck drops at 7 with Mr. Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns on the call, and then the Huron Windows postgame show live from Boston Pizza City Place as well. Mr. Kevin Olszewski from the Don Vito Roundtable making his pre- and postgame debut tonight. I hear Rick Ralph's going to sit in with him and talk him through some maritime math and everything else.
I think Rick Ralph's going to be enjoying his hours, his better hours this winter. Good luck with getting him in there.
So we'll delve into this a lot more. And, of course, hear from Paul Maurice still to come. We'll talk some NFL, MLB, and, of course, Ian Mendez from Ottawa live at 7. And we'll start qualifying people for Hockey Nights in Vegas during the Royal Sports Power Hour as well. Dennis Bayak also going to join us this morning at 7:30. Dustin Byfuglien faced the media on Saturday afternoon out at training camp at Bell MTS Iceplex. Before we get into that, what did you think of Paul Maurice's comments about his relationship with Dustin Byfuglien and saying that he did run him too hard last year, led all defensemen at over 27 minutes, just under 28 per, and their relationship, and just some real interesting stuff there, especially the comment where he said, if he and I don't see eye to eye on something, neither one of us is backing down. But then the next day, we have a good laugh about it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that little bit of an insight. Anytime you can get a coach or someone to share something, some of the inside culture and nature of things, it's pretty cool. And it was a lot of fun speaking with Coach there. I still don't give a Buff a pass whatsoever. You know, I understand the long minutes, but to me, you can play smarter in those situations instead of pushing things offensively to the degree that he did and all the rest of it. So I'm not willing to give him an out for that. But ultimately here, what Jets fans basically need to pray for is that Dustin Byfuglien is here and he's focused, and there's going to be that certain level of detail that you can tell when he's keyed in on his game. And I tell you, when Paul Maurice told us before we saw Buff that Buff tested as high as each year's gone by, he's testing higher under the leadership of Paul Maurice. And then when he came out onto the ice and just how lean he looked, it was like, holy cow, he really looks lean out there. So it looks, by all indication, that Byfuglien's ready to go.
I've never seen him look that lean.
I agree.
Like, he is, I don't want to say shredded, but...
Well, you can't say shredded if you don't see without a... Yeah.
The heat we take on Twitter about putting that out, did you see that? Like, people go...
Yeah, I don't take the same heat that you do.
Every player comes in the best shape of their life, and everybody...
People were very disingenuous about that. I saw at least a dozen tweets about that. Say, well, everyone comes into camp in the best shape of their life.
Well, that's not true.
Byfuglien looks different than every other year. You can make fun of it all you want. It's just fact. Like, he looks much leaner. It's not a case of, you know, a guy looking the same, but he says he's faster and stronger than ever before. There is a noticeable physical difference to how he looks on the ice.
To me, it's just as interesting as Jonathan Toews admitting that he dropped 10 to 12 pounds and wants to play at a different, like, now that he's older, and wants to play the more of the speed the NHL's going and everything else. Like, it's just Jacob Trouba mentioned Pilates and how he changed his offseason workout to not put on as much muscle anymore.
We've talked about that. I mean, that's... I don't know if Dustin Byfuglien's losing weight to get faster or whatever, but there was Ovechkin, Toews, you're talking about, that was the movement in the NHL this year, is typically where it's bigger, stronger, right? Now there's a noticeable shift to lighter, faster. It's absolute. There's definitely a shift.
As for Dustin Byfuglien himself, he spoke with the media yesterday and he gave his thoughts on getting used to a new goaltender as a defenseman, and particularly in Mr. Steve Mason.
Practice, talking, knowing how he, you know, plays the puck, stops the puck, you know, how they come off him, just game, just reps.
And, hey, this is the first time, Wicks mentioned it last week, where you got a goalie who's nifty with the puck, who knows how to come out and bring that asset to be beneficial towards the team. Not when you got Pav and Hutch and Hellebuck, who look like they're handling a grenade at times, right? So a guy that's comfortable back there, and it'll be real interesting also with the sort of the mindset of Steve Mason, who was described to me as he's a guy, kind of guy that plays angry. So some of the communication out there and the level of sort of leadership from the back end that's going to be on the ice today may be something that this team has never seen before since it's arrived here in Winnipeg. The influence that has on some of the D in directing traffic back there will be interesting to watch.
Yeah, you know how you have in football DBs where some of them have ball skills like a receiver and you don't worry about them going up to get it, but then you have the other 90% where it's
beat 'em up ball,
right? Yeah. That's Jets goalies 2011 to 2016. This is going to be a new era with Steve Mason, so enjoy that. But I think that's probably the least amount of adjustment a defenseman has to make. It's going to be, do you like it when I, like, do you want me to get in front of shots in this area? Mm. For this, like, it's just more so a goalie's preference when it comes to either, you know, being somebody who wants to get in front of shots and block them, or does the goalie just want to just give me the clean lane, let me see the puck, and I'll handle it from there? That's probably the biggest adjustment they're going to have to make if Steve Mason kind of has different preferences than Hellebuck did last year.
Yes, for sure. We're hearing from Dustin Byfuglien this morning on The Big Show, TSN 1290. It's a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Wild tonight at Bell MTS Place. 7 o'clock is puck drop right here on TSN 1290. Dustin Byfuglien was also asked about how to get off to a good start.
We got to believe in each other. It's, you know, we can't worry about any other buddy but what's in this locker and what's putting that jersey on. Believe in one another and go out on the ice and, you know, stick to the game plan that we have and, you know, go out there and do your job the way you're supposed to do it and, you know, you should be all right.
That hasn't changed about Buff, sort of lean, laid back, sort of believing each other and we'll be all right. I believe that was the response a year or two ago at a fairly critical moment during the in one season here. The attention to detail is going to be massive, right? And what the coaches are trying to put into effect, and that's something that we're going to see very quickly here. I saw a good breakdown by our buddy Gus Katsaros as to why the Toronto Maple Leafs are so successful, and he got into some of the systems and how the support that the Toronto Maple Leafs have in all the different zones. And when we talked last year about the overall defensive play of the Winnipeg Jets, the most striking omissions defensively weren't typically by the defensive core. The things that jumped out the very most were mistakes being made by the forwards in the defensive zone in coming back and providing support. And that was something that was real evident in Paul Maurice's first year upon his arrival here, how that whole team and the forwards are really supportive to the D. And that's something that we can only hope that we see jump off the page early once the real stuff gets going out there.
And it sounds like Bufflin's kind of being indifferent to the question and not being sincere, but he's just being more simplistic about the whole thing. Where, you know, when the Bruins under Claude Julien would come in here, and they would be a well-oiled five-man unit.
It looked mechanical.
It was beautiful in like a robotic sense, in a way, where it was just everybody. It wasn't kind of a one person has this responsibility sort of thing. It's everybody has to be in this spot, and you kind of trust and believe that your teammate is going to help you out there. And I think that's what he's referring to. More so, like, it, not just, you know, kind of indifferent, well, we got to believe in each other. If everybody acts and is in the right spot that they're supposed to be, they can be a much different and much stronger team, more so defensively and in the neutral zone and things like that.
Well, and we've talked about the confidence level of this team coming into this season being a little bit different, a little more, I guess, secure, a step forward, however we want to describe it. And maybe he's touching on that a little bit as well. Dustin Bufflin was also asked what he likes about this year's Jets team.
Everyone's, you know, that much older, wiser, you know, a little bit more experienced. That's all we can go on from right here. You know, it's just a couple days in the training camp here. We haven't done nothing yet. So, you know, there's a lot of steps we got to go forward to. We just got to, you know, just keep working and work together.
The poor big fella, huh? He's just not a big fan of the microphone and not maybe at his most comfortable, that sort of thing here. When he's sharing thoughts and stuff, but yeah, like what's going to be different? How can he answer that when he's been here or the team's been all together and on the ice for 3-4 days, sort of thing?
I like that whole approach though, and we heard a bit of it in the off season when Blake Wheeler was on TSN 1290 from his home in Florida, and then a different sort of thing. Like there's that confidence there and stuff, but they it's not tempering expectations to me from what I'm hearing. It's making sure that although this looks really good, we still have to do the work. We still have to put in the effort, and we still have to make this go. I'm taking that from those comments, and maybe I'm out to lunch, but I think that that's what I'm taking from that is just the whole, look, everything looks good, but we just got here. We've got a lot of work to do, and we have to make sure we do that work in order for this to play out the way we want it to, as well as just looking good on paper.
And they got nothing to be cocky about. I mean, everyone looking at this, who has them winning the Central? Nobody. I haven't seen anybody pick them to win the Central in that sort of muddied six team. They have pick them wherever they are, you know, 1-6 in that situation. But certainly this group's got nothing to be cocky about. They're simply poised to make some noise this year. That's it.
I was catching up on some hockey news on the weekend, and there's that poll that they polled people asking who would win the Central Division, and the Jets were dead last. 4% thought that they would win the Central Division. And why I say that is because the Colorado Avalanche got 5%.
That ain't right.
Can you believe that? Like, I understand
I don't know.
People.
Who took the polls then?
Those would be American. Well, you wonder how many Americans would be a part of it. Or like, I can imagine.
Like, I was blown. I don't expect people to say the Jets are going to win the Central Division. I get that. They were dead last of the teams that and the people. And I'll bring that in tomorrow and we'll read it on who voted. but I would assume it's hockey people.
Oh, I see the mistake. It was the New York Jets. They thought the New York Jets would win the Cinch. That's why the Avalanche barely edged them out. That could be honest. Like you can't.
And we're talking about 49% of the vote.
You're not a legitimate hockey person if you think the Avs have a better chance of winning the division than the Jets. I'm sorry. I don't think the Jets are going to win the division, but who has Colorado ahead of any team in the Central this year?
That I agree with. Dustin Byfuglien also talked about having a healthy Jets defensive core.
We should be pretty good back there. It's, you know, one of those things that we're just going to have to, you know, once we get into, you know, the games and start moving and, you know, seeing where everyone is and, you know, how we're going to match up and who's going to play with who. It's something that we're just going to have to, you know, do as we go.
It should be damn good back there. Knock on wood, boys. Stay healthy.
And finally, for Mr. Dustin Byfuglien, he will play tonight, and so will Mr. Logan Stanley. Here's Dustin Byfuglien's comments on Logan Stanley.
He's got one reach that I wish I had. You know, it's, for the most part, it's, you know, first time I've got to skate with him. You know, we really haven't done much to, you know how he does anything out there, really. It's just talk to him. Just keep him happy, keep him, you know, not getting mad, and just make sure he's having fun out there, that's all.
Sounds like they may be paired up tonight.
Yeah, it does sound like they're going to be paired up tonight. What is that, 6'5 and 6'7?
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to watching Logan Stanley. He's been raked over the coals a little bit here in recent kind of breakdowns. He and Tucker Pullman on the back end will be something to key in on tonight.
Yeah, and I kind of like the move by, I mean, I don't know if it was Maurice or someone else on the coaching, if it was Charlie Huddy that put the D pairs together, but maybe insulate him with Byfuglien. You know, to try and keep that confidence up a little bit. I know they talked about having Stanley Myers, where Myers can kind of teach him about playing as a big guy in the NHL, but Myers is coming off an injury. He isn't, like, put him with the big guy. Let Byfuglien essentially take over 95% of the puck handling duties and maybe just kind of slowly work that confidence back into Stanley's
game. Oh, yeah, that slow baptism of two-on-ones, etc.
Come on.
start a line brawl and see if anyone can get a punch in with the reach from those two.
Maurice
see what
is
happens.
Like, just rush, Buff. Don't worry. Logan's got you.
We'll talk more about a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day, Jets and Wild tonight, 7 o'clock on TSN 1290. But up next, we'll get into some Major League Baseball and, of course, the NFL Week 2. Quote of the season could have been yesterday when the Atlanta Falcons were up and Chris Collinsworth says, I think it's fair to say that no Falcons fan feels this lead is safe. How dare you, Collinsworth? We'll talk some NFL and MLB next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
The Big Show with Jim, Troy, and Brandon. Ian Mendez of TSN 1200 in Ottawa joins us at the top of the hour, the Royal Sports Power Hour. Major League Baseball, the Washington Nationals last week clinched a division and a playoff spot in the NL East. The LA Dodgers have a playoff spot. They've yet to clinch the division, although they do have a 9.5-game lead over the Arizona Diamondbacks. The Cleveland Indians have clinched the division, 14.5 games ahead of the Minnesota Twins. I believe it was around All-Star break. They had a half-game deficit or a game and a half against the Twins. Cleveland goes on to clinch the division. And yesterday, the Houston Astros clinched their first division since 2001. Those are the Major League Baseball teams that have made the postseason already as they get winding down. Any thoughts on that, gentlemen, and who you're leaning towards right now before the rest of the teams are decided?
Yeah, no great thoughts. What's kind of sucks a little bit here is that as far as divisional races go, you got the American League East where the Yankees are three games back, and you've got in the Central, National League Central, the Cubs with the Brewers and Cardinals in pursuit. But other than that, That's it. Double-digit difference all the way across the board. It's really quite disappointing.
Even, I mean, the closest race right now is the Twins and Angels, and the Twins are two up with just over 10 to go. Like, even that's a little anticlimactic in a way. Is like if the Twins go something like 9-3 or 8-5, like it's, I don't know. It's, I mean, it's good that Cleveland went on that win streak because other than that, it's, I don't know. The baseball season's been kind of underwhelming for me, to be honest with you.
And it's compounded probably for us with that,
more
is
so,
the level
yeah.
of disappointment with the Blue Jays.
Yeah, and they blew another massive lead yesterday against Minnesota, actually, in the Twin Cities. Week two in the National Football League wraps up tonight with the New York Giants hosting the Detroit Lions. What was the biggest surprise or game you were watching yesterday, gentlemen, in the week two of the National Football League?
The biggest surprise yesterday. Well, I think you've got to look at Denver obliterating Dallas and say that was the biggest surprise. 50 pass attempts, I believe, in the game for Dak Prescott that looked like that was the first time you kind of went, with Dak Prescott. Looked so fine and dandy in week one. He looked spectacular. And then, you know, Dak Prescott, 3 carries for 24 yards, and is under all kinds of heat this morning and yesterday was because after an interception in the third quarter, a ball that went through Dez Bryant's hands, lands into Broncos' hand, and he just stops, puts his hands on his hips. He is in a 4 or 5 yard radius of the interception and doesn't give any pursuit, nothing. Just watches it. And then, of course, you got Lawrence Taylor, a bunch of other people lighting him up for just giving up on his team. So that going forward here was the story of yesterday to me, the Broncos just destroying the Cowboys.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I would also add that if you're a fan of Sean Payton and Drew Brees and the Saints, enjoy this year because they're not coming back next year. It's the end. Like, they're done. They are so far done. It's not even close. We all knew New Orleans' defense was bad, but that was so embarrassing. The amount of broken coverages and some of the star players for New England basically just waltzing in the middle of the field wide open. Yeah, Tony Romo going literally during the game. What are they doing? Like, for a color guy to watch a game and go, what are they doing?
Yeah.
Pretty much, you know, that might describe the New Orleans Saints for the rest of this season, and they're going to move on from Brees, and they're going to move on from Payton, and they should.
Well, and Sean Payton, and I'm never a big fan of this, but Sean Payton, I've never seen a coach be questioned by his own players. And not just this year with Adrian Peterson, and then again yesterday on the sidelines, but last year, it's clear to me that the owner loves this guy, but it's also clear to me that a change should have been done probably 2 seasons ago and just simply moved on, gone in a different direction. I don't know about Brees. I don't know if they don't re-sign him. And I don't think they should, but...
Well, they probably will, yeah.
Yeah, so, but Sean Payton, I just... You know, I felt bad for him yesterday again. Like, his players don't even believe in him anymore. To me, that is clear when they're questioning him. The other big thing to me is the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, that O-line, right?
That is an awful football team. Well, not awful. I shouldn't say that.
The offense.
Their offense is awful. And Russell Wilson, we heard about the health of it and all that, but 12-9 over San Francisco and barely eking that out. And I would even question some of the coaching. When they poured it on and drove the field and got a touchdown, it was night and day compared to how they played the previous three quarters. They've got issues in Seattle, too. We'll talk more about this. Open the Boss Pizza fan line as well on the NFL at 9 o'clock. Ian Mendez is next on The Big Show.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Welcome back to The Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruicki with you on the Royal Sports Power Hour. And this next segment is brought to you by Olympic Building Center. We will have your NHL news and notes in this hour as well. Dennis Bayak is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. And of course, your first chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas is coming up. But right now, we're going to talk with Mr. Ian Mendez of TSN 1200 in Ottawa on this bright, beautiful Monday morning. We go to our nation's capital. Mr. Mendez, how are you today?
Hey, doing great, guys. How are you?
Excellent, thank you. A lot of people in Bomberland are wondering if you or who will be playing quarterback when the Red Blacks come to town. Talk about the win yesterday and how the injury bug has hit that position for the Ottawa Red Blacks.
Yeah, my goodness, I might be called upon here this week for the game in Winnipeg because, you know, last week you had Trevor Harris going down with a separated shoulder. Then this week they had Drew Tate in there. And third quarter of that game, suddenly he's knocked out. He's got his arm in a sling. and it's down to Ryan Lindley. So, you know, usually on Mondays, the head coach of the Red Blacks, Rick Campbell, actually joins our radio station kind of in the mid-morning here, sometime around 9 o'clock Eastern time, our time. And he'll give us an update, and I'm sure you'll probably see this on social media at some point. I think initially they were hoping that Drew Tate just got the wind knocked out of him in that game yesterday, but I don't know. He had his arm, I think, in a sling for a bit. Seems to me that it might be a little bit more serious than they first thought. So if I had to wager right now, I'd say Ryan Lindley, a guy who's played, might be a familiar name to people. Remember, he played with the Arizona Cardinals a few years ago when they had a little bit of a carousel at quarterback. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, he even started a playoff game for Arizona due to injury. So if I had to guess, I'd say it's Ryan Lindley. But that game yesterday was huge for the Red Blacks, because they go into Montreal, they beat just an awful Alouettes team, who right now, I know Hamilton lost again this week, but I think a lot of people might tell you that the Alouettes might have surpassed the Ticats in terms of the team that's the most sort of, I don't know, dysfunctional or lost right now, because they've lost five in a row. And I think the only stat you need to know about that game yesterday, time of possession, Ottawa had the ball for 41 minutes, guys. 41 minutes in a football game, which I believe was the fifth highest time of possession ever in a CFL regular season game since they started tracking this stuff. So that thing was one-sided, and it was a very impressive win for the Red Blacks, and I don't think, quite frankly, it mattered who was under quarterback, because the Alouettes are just that bad right now.
Ian, I've thought this for a while. I thought NFL refs were much more aggressive in calling headshots, but the CFL, in seeing what Calgary last week with Mike Riley, and the ref is right there, doesn't calling it. Seeing the end of the game against Toronto, where Matt Black comes in and the crown of his helmet into the mask of Mike Riley, the vicious shot from behind, McCaw on Jerome Messam, that in my opinion should lead to suspension. The CFL has a problem with headshots and the refs not calling them.
I mean, you want to add a list of the issues the CFL and the officials have had this year. It's just the latest, right? It just seems like no matter what you do lately, it's they can't do anything right. And you know that unpenalized hit on Mike Riley. If you're the Edmonton Eskimos, and you see your essentially, you know, you see players like that getting hit, I don't know. I don't know what to say. Like, I'm honestly at a loss. Like, we've almost gotten to the point where on our station, at least on our show, we've almost put an end to talking about CFL officiating, because I think it's a fruitless exercise. And the one thing I like about Randy Ambrosi is I feel like he's come in, and at the very least, I think of the commissioner, he's identified a few issues around the league and said, okay, I don't like these. You know what? Headshots are an issue, or at least head trauma is an issue. Let's get rid of contact practices. Let's look at the way that the challenge rule is used. He's come in and done some things, but I really hope in the off season, because I think it's impossible to do this in the middle of the season. I really hope that he is able to figure out a way to make the officiating better, because I think this is a great game. I really do. I think the CFL has a really nice product that they shoot themselves in the foot with so many things that seem to be preventable. And you're right, like the headshots here that go uncalled just add to the list of things where you feel like every single time it's a roll of the dice. You don't know what's going to get called in a CFL game, whether it's a headshot, pass interference, video review. Like, you really don't know. And I think that's a really frustrating thing, that it feels like if the CFL could get rid of that sort of perception about it, that the officiating is subpar, I think it'll go a long way into sort of adding credibility to this league. And like I said, I think it's a really good product that just sometimes shoots itself in the foot.
Ian Mendez from TSN 1200 in Ottawa joining us today on the Royal Sports Power Hour on the Big Show, 10 minutes past the hour. Ian, Clark MacArthur failed his medical. Give us the latest on that, what the future is for him. And then can you delve in a little bit on just how he played come playoff time, given the fact that he's now since failed this medical?
Well, you know what? First thing I'm doing, I'm checking Clark MacArthur's Instagram to make sure he's not calling the failed physical a joke.
We are going to touch on that later, too.
Yeah. But, hey, listen, the thing on MacArthur is this. I think you have to remember that Clark MacArthur last year came back in the playoffs when nobody thought he could or would, or even some people thought should. He came back and he played in the playoffs. But in the second round against the Rangers, he took a hit, and he ended up saying he had a pinched nerve in his neck. He said it was a neck issue, not a recurring concussion issue. But at the end of the year, at the season-ending sort of media availability, garbage bag day, both he and Pierre Dorion alluded to the fact that he had a neck issue. And in fact, if I'm not mistaken, not that Vegas would have taken Clark MacArthur anyway, because there would have been so many red flags on him, but I don't think he was eligible to be selected in the Vegas expansion draft because he was deemed to be injured because of a neck issue. So there were signs that there might be something wrong back in May and June. And I guess the summertime just, it didn't necessarily go away. And I think if you're Clark, if I'm a betting man now, I say he doesn't come back. I think he wanted to go out on his own terms. And I think by coming back and playing in the playoffs last year, and if you recall, he scored a couple of big goals against Boston, including the one in overtime in Game 6 to clinch the series. I think if that's how Clark MacArthur goes out, I think he can feel pretty good about, I came back and I essentially went out on my own terms. I know that he's got a little bit of a neck issue here, but I don't think he'll ever have to sit there and wonder what if. What if I, I think he gave it his all last year, but I think that it's a very hard thing physically and mentally to come back from a concussion or in what appears to be this case, a neck issue. I think he's been down that road before. I think he understands when you've only played 8 regular season games in 2 years like Clark has, I think you know the mountain that's ahead of you. I think he's done that, and if he's going to cash his chips in now while he's relatively healthy, I think more power to him, and I think that's what's happened here. I don't think he's, if you had to ask me, I don't think he comes back and plays again.
Ian, I've always felt that you never really know the NFL, and it's hard to judge the teams until week 6 is complete. Having said that, so many were holding the Dallas Cowboys in high regard, and yesterday they go get lambasted by the Broncos. Your take on that game?
Well, it's funny how last week you guys didn't have time to talk about the Cowboys when they beat the Giants, and now all of a sudden you guys have time. Hey, listen, I got a ton of respect now for the Denver Broncos, and you know who really impressed me yesterday was Trevor Siemian. Because I always felt like there was always this feeling like Trevor Siemian is sort of this, stopgap quarterback. And, yeah, he's okay, but he's not really elite. Well, he carved up the Dallas Cowboys yesterday, and he carved them up good. I mean, he had Emmanuel Sanders for a couple of touchdowns. And I'm thinking Denver with that defense, when they're going, and Von Miller can still be a very effective pass rusher. Boy, the Denver Broncos, I don't think their defense is as good as it was 2 years ago when they won the Super Bowl. But you look at that division, too. And I think right now that's hands down the best division in the entire NFL. And I think for all of us in football that have looked at the NFL and especially the AFC and said, boy, who's going to take out New England? Who's going to be the team that's able to take out Bill Belichick and the Patriots in the playoffs? I think we should put all of our focus on the AFC West, because I think that's where it's going to come out of. Because I think amongst Kansas City, Oakland and Denver, they're all sick. They're a combined 6-0. And the fact that they all have to play each other, I think at some point, someone's going to come out of that division 11-5, 12-4, and you're going to look at them and say, man, that team is about as good as New England, and I'd love to see them play at Foxborough or at home in a playoff game. So that's the one thing I took out of yesterday. Boy, I thought Denver looked really good. I know Oakland beat the Jets, and they're not all that good. And Kansas City, they beat a kind of an average Philadelphia team, but you put it all together, and I think that AFC West, I think that's going to be the most fascinating division in all of football.
Yeah, for sure. What'd you make of the Falcons beating the Green Bay Packers?
Well, here's the thing on Atlanta, and I think a lot of people were wondering, would this team have a hangover effect of going to the Super Bowl? We all know, yada, 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 the score and blowing the lead, but how would they come back mentally? Would they be hungry? Would they just be this sort of walking zombie team coming back and just shell-shocked from what happened in February? And I think they got away with a one in the first week against Chicago, because I don't think they were that good. But I'll tell you what, that first half yesterday, that was clinical. Matt Ryan and Devontae Freeman and company, they absolutely put on a clinic. And it was, I think, 24-7 at the half. And you go back to the NFC Championship game, they were beating Green Bay 24-0 at the half. So if you consider Green Bay to be a very good team, which I do and I think a lot of people do, and you consider that the Falcons in their last two games that have played against Green Bay at home have outscored them 48-7 in the first half, yeah, I think they're a pretty good team. So I think a lot of people kind of wrote off Atlanta in the NFC just thinking, oh, okay, well, they had their chance. They missed it. They're going to come back. They're going to be shell-shocked. They're 2-0. I thought they looked really good, and even though Green Bay sort of made it a little bit closer in the second half, I don't think that game was really close. I think Atlanta established itself maybe as the best team, or maybe we should be talking about them as the best team in the NFC after beating Green Bay last night.
We got to run, Ian, but right before we do, how long do you expect Eric Carlson to be out?
You know what? I had a good conversation with Eric yesterday, and boy, he's still not able to put his foot in the skate boot. And to me, once he's able to do that, then I think you can sort of narrow down the timeline. And I think if I'm a betting man, though, I think he misses most, if not all, of October, to be honest with you. If he's lucky, he's going to be able to put his foot in the boot maybe at the end of this month, early October, and then he's got to get back into conditioning. But best case for Ottawa is he comes back late October. Worst case is he comes back at some point in November.
Great stuff, Ian. I appreciate it as always, and have a great week.
Yeah, my pleasure, guys. Anytime.
Thanks so much, Ian.
Ian Mendez on The Big Show. Coming up next on the Royal Sports Power Hour, your chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Our previous segment with Mr. Ian Mendez was a presentation of the Olympic Building Center. Visit their design center today or online at olympicbuildingcenter.ca. Build with confidence. It's time. The 12th caller through. It's 780-1290. Will be our latest qualifier for TSN 1290 and redtag.ca's presentation of Hockey Nights in Vegas. We're sending five lucky listeners and their guests to Las Vegas this November, where they'll see the Winnipeg Jets take on the Vegas Golden Knights Friday, November the 10th at T-Mobile Arena. We'll supply the two hockey tickets to the game, return airfare to and from Las Vegas, four nights accommodations on the Strip, and $1,290 in cash to help you cover a few extras during your stay in Sin City. Listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays at 7:15 a.m., 8:15 a.m. right here on The Big Show, 12:15 p.m. on the Don Vito Roundtable with Kevin Olszewski, and 5:15 p.m. on the Afternoon Ride with Hustler and Rick Ralph. Or watch for bonus chances to qualify online. Winners will be announced Monday mornings on The Big Show, September 11th. Kevin was our grand prize winner on the 11th. Congratulations once again. Next grand prize draw is a week from today, September the 25th. Then again on October 9th, October 23rd, and November the 6th. For more information, check out tsn1290.ca. Hockey Nights in Vegas, presented by redtag.ca, where Canada shops for great travel deals. And us here at TSN 1290, Mr. Ruicki, who's our latest qualifier?
It's Mr. Ron Carrier.
Ron Carrier, congratulations, sir. How are you?
I am fantastic now.
Excellent, Ron.
Yeah, no, this is, I've been trying ever since you guys had contests in this station, and this is the first time, so I'm quite happy right now.
And a very loyal, long-time listener.
Absolutely.
We appreciate that. Have you ever been to Vegas, Ron?
Never.
Never?
Never.
Woo! This could be life-changing for you.
It could be monumental, that's for sure.
Do you know who you would take?
Well, you guys keep on asking that question, and if I don't say my wife, I may not be married too long. So we all know the answer.
You might say Troy Westwood. You might say Brandon Ruicki.
Why not?
They like Vegas. Congratulations just for qualifying. You get a Jets gear gift card, and we wish you and your wife then the best of luck. Our grand prize draw coming up on September 25th, and if you don't get that one, you're still in for the other three, so you have four chances, and now that you have qualified, you're good to go for all four of the remaining grand prize draws for a trip for two to Vegas to see the Golden Knights and the Jets and some extras on November the 10th at T-Mobile Arena. Congratulations.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Great show. I love listening to you guys every morning.
Good luck, Ron.
Take care.
We appreciate that, Ron, and thanks for listening to TSN 1290. Your next chance to qualify today is at 8:15, so in about an hour's time here on The Big Show, then 12:15 with Kevin Olszewski and the Don Vito Roundtable and the Afternoon Ride a game day version with Andrew Patterson, the Hustler, and, of course, Rick Ralph at 5:15 p.m. It is a Winnipeg Jets Santa Lucia Pizza game day, as we will have the Manitoba Building Trades pregame show live from Boston Pizza City Place with Kevin O. Then the Jets and the Wild drop the puck at 7 p.m. tonight with Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns on the call. And then the Huron Windows postgame show live once again from Boston Pizza City Place will wrap it all up. It's the first game of the 2017-18 season, although it is preseason for the Jets tonight, gentlemen.
And
excited?
Oh yeah, for sure excited, and just excited really to see the young fellas. Right? You don't need to lock into Line A, Perreault, Shifley, Little. You know what they're bringing to the table, but to see what Brendan Lemieux does out there tonight, for instance, and certainly Kyle Connor with all kinds of expectations. You want to go see him go out there and make a mark early here. No question about it. Even the likes of a guy like Marco Dano, who's still sort of wrestling and vying for a spot. Certainly Stanley, Logan Stanley, and Tucker Poolman as well. So it's going to be, and you'd like to see Connor Hellebuck go in there and have a solid game as well. So there's no shortage of storylines whatsoever here.
Yeah, and which, I mean, for me, it's the two Connors. Which Kyle Connor are we getting? Are we getting game 82 Kyle Connor or games 1 through 20? What difference do we see in him over the course of a summer? And the same thing with Hellebuck. I'm not too worried about what his save percentage will be after the game tonight or anything like that. It's more so just how he looks in the net and to see if there's any noticeable differences either in terms of positioning or if he's gotten a bit quicker crease to crease, which I think, you know, a lot of people are concerned about the glove hand. I'd be a little bit more weary of how fast he can move in terms of side to side in his net.
Connor Hellebuck will get the start tonight in net for the Jets. Eric Comrie will be backing up. Interesting comments from Steve Mason on Friday out of training camp, talking about how he almost quit hockey through his experience with the Columbus Blue Jackets, was not enjoying it whatsoever, did not like going to the rink. And his agent called and said, Philadelphia is going to make a push for you at the deadline. And he literally said to himself, well, let's give it one more try because I'm about to quit the game. And went to Philly and now has rekindled his passion for the game. But in those comments, he was talking about how he didn't know Connor Hellebuck, how he's come to town. His family didn't arrive in the city till Friday, which is when he made these comments. So he and Connor Hellebuck have been hanging out. They've gone for dinner. They've gotten to know each other, and they're really looking forward to working together, including spending some time watching some NFL together last Sunday, just sort of getting that relationship going, which, you know, I know that sounds normal, but it really sometimes isn't. A guy comes to town, nice to meet you, I'll see you camp and let's get going. They've gone out of their way to not only spend some time together around the rink, but outside of the rink as well.
I wonder how they match up from a personality standpoint. And Steve Mason is fairly well known to be, you know, on that edge sort of thing and aggressive and playing angry, all that sort of thing. I wonder if, because Connor Hellebuck sort of, you know, not real sure for sure. Like it, you hear a little bit of chatter about his approach to the game and all the rest of it. And he sounds intense whenever he gives interviews, but you just kind of wonder what's going on there personality-wise with the two of those guys.
We'll get into that maybe and a whole bunch of other stuff when Dennis Bayak, the face of the Jets on TSN 3 and one of the main voices here on TSN 1290, joins the Big Show next.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Knott AutoCorp present the Blue Bus. Before every Winnipeg Blue Bombers home game this season, we're taking W fans to Investors Group Field in our Knott AutoCorp VIP Blue Bus. We'll pick you and five buddies up from a starting destination, drive you to the game, and when it's done, we'll take you back to wherever you started. Prize includes six tickets to an upcoming Blue Bombers home game and free transportation to and from. Enter now at tsn1290.ca.
What's the deal with the Wild Air guitar over there?
Sweet guitar riff right there.
You knew you were going to, at least at the very least, comment on it.
Yeah. You had to at least let it play a little bit. Get you going in the morning on a Monday. It's 33 minutes past the hour in the Royal Sports Power Hour here on the Big Show. And it is a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Wild live from Bell MTS Place tonight at 7 on our station, TSN 1290.
Can I please say real quick, and I think Wicks will jump all over this as well. over the weekend, Old School was on like two or three times in a row.
I did watch it.
And I watched it. And dude, to the degree that you remind me of Will Ferrell, it's ridiculous,
it's
isn't
what?
It? Like, it is just flat stupid. It's like, I'm at work. I feel like I'm watching you in a major motion feature film, man.
When that film came out, I think I was in Grand Prairie, Alberta, working in the media and playing senior men's soccer and basketball. And somebody said that to me, and I was like, "What?" And the other guy,
even right there, like it's the tone, it's the tone and delivery that are identical.
Everything, man.
Well, and another guy literally piped up and said, "Well, the body for sure, Toph. Like after a game when we're in the shower, you definitely have that pear-shaped Will Ferrell body." And I was like, "How dare you?" Anyways, moving on, way beyond this is the Jets in the Wild tonight. The face of the Winnipeg Jets on TSN 3 and one of our main voices here on 1290, Mr. Dennis Bayak joins us now. Do I look like Will Ferrell?
Yeah, I can kind of see that a little bit. Fortunately, I didn't see the movie this weekend, but we were busy at the rink. But yeah, I'm going to have to check into that a little bit.
Oh, great. I look for that analysis next time
as
well,
Dennis.
That's
a pretty good... Bit of a slam on Will Ferrell, but
I prefer to be the godfather of that movie. However, we'll move on. What have your thoughts been on the first couple of days of camp? We were just talking about Steve Mason's comments on Friday.
Yeah, it was interesting, especially when he got into some of the final days with the Columbus Blue Jackets. And, you know, we sometimes forget that athletes have a very human side to them, and despite the fact they get paid well for what they do and everything else, lots of other things come into play. They're human beings, and they're like every one of us that have good days and bad days, and sometimes good things happen, sometimes bad things happen, and we've all had times where we sat back and looked at our future and said, okay, where am I going here? And he had some of those days, but very much looking forward to the challenge here in Winnipeg. He understands it came from a market where the fans weren't exactly the friendliest either. So they are here in Winnipeg. They will embrace Steve Mason. I don't think there's any question about that. If he comes in here and plays the way he can, I think the fans are going to very much enjoy what he brings to this team.
Dennis, I know it's an intangible, but it's real cool, and it's almost so thick and heavy that you can reach out and grab it. But the mindset of this team and sort of the weight that they know they're poised on being in a situation here where there's no apparent holes in the lineup, and just the level of weight put onto a real good start and all the rest of it. It's really neat, the mindset where this team's at.
Well, it is. So now you've got the apprehension. Now you want to get the season going. Now you want October 4th to roll around and let's get playing for real. But there's 7 preseason games to be played. Not a lot of practice time left. I mean, there's 2 groups yet, so the group that isn't playing will get practice time in. You know, but with 7 preseason games, it's a busy week. You've got 4 games in 6 nights from Winnipeg to Minnesota to Edmonton. So you know, it's a busy week for them, but they're looking forward to getting going. There's no question, and there does seem to be that attitude inside the dressing room that we can talk all we want and say how we're this and say how we're that. Bottom line is, when that puck drops for real, we have to be ready to go, and we have to get going here. They understand the challenges ahead of them, and most importantly, they understand the division that they're in. And I think the message with some of them has been, let's just take care of our own business. Let's not worry about any of the other teams. Let's do what we have to do, and we're going to be fine. And that is going to be the challenge. But you're right. There does seem to be this, you know, this attitude inside the dressing room that, you know, let's go out there. We've got a good lineup. Let's go out there and show ourselves that we are a playoff team.
What specifically do you look for in preseason games from teams, Dennis?
Oh, it really varies. You know what? Veterans are going to use the preseason to get themselves ready for the regular season. You know, rookies are going to try and, or not rookies, but guys who were on the bubble are going to try and show the coaching staff and management that they belong in the starting 23 come opening night. You know, so it really, really varies. I think Steve Mason, whenever he gets the opportunity to get in, it's just going to be to get that first game under his belt, find out how the defensemen play ahead of him. So I think it's different for him. I think some of the veteran defensemen are going to see how Steve Mason plays. You know, where does he put the rebounds? How much does he like to play the puck? Does he come out and trap behind the net all the time? All those sorts of things. But, you know, and then guys just work on the little things that they have to work on. You know, face-offs. You know, when Adam Lowry wants to continue that, he wants to try and get an offensive side going to his game. You know, when Matt Hendricks comes into the lineup, he's going to want to show that, look, I was brought here because I'm a veteran guy and I can win some face-offs. He's going to want to do that. So it really does vary. You know, the line tonight, Scarboza, Dano, and Brendan Lemieux, imagine they'll keep that line together. They've been together for the first part of training camp here. You know, there's an interesting line because you've got three guys there that are going to be out to try and show, you know, back to what I said, that, hey, I want to be in that lineup first night.
Dennis, Jim made a good point, I thought, earlier in the show, saying that with the level of sort of focus and need for the special teams to improve this year, that the Jets should be using a fair chunk of this preseason time to hone the individuals that will be on those teams, if not for all seven games. Dennis, how quickly do you think Paul Maurice focuses into that?
Well, maybe not for all seven, but I don't think there's any question it's on the radar. I mean, they've been doing a lot of work in the first couple games here on the defensive side of the game. How they want things played, and no question that there will be time spent. What's interesting is when you look at their the power play and the penalty kill last year, the numbers as far as opportunities weren't that different. They drew as many power plays as they took penalties. You know, the ratio difference was they didn't kill enough penalties, and I think that's, you know, when you look at it, they'll have, you know, a healthier Sean Matthias. They'll have a healthy Brian Little to start the season with, hopefully. They've added Matt Hendricks, who will be a penalty killer. Tyler Myers will be healthy. He'll kill penalties. And they've added Dmitry Kulikov, who can kill penalties. And they've added Steve Mason. And the old adage, your goaltender is your most important guy in your penalty kill. You know, so they've made some changes as far as the penalty kill is concerned. The power play, I think, is going to be fine. I just don't think this team is going to have trouble scoring goals. Paul Maurice touched on it yesterday, is to have the patience when it comes to scoring goals. If you're down a goal early in the second period, don't think you have to go out and tie this game up right now. Just be patient, play your game. But back to the special teams and that, I think he'll be doing some work. When you look at tonight's lineup, I mean, there's a very good chance that the first power play, Patrick Laine led them in power play goals last year. No reason to think he won't be on the first unit this year. And, you know, and that's why I think whenever they get the opportunity, Adam Lowry's back in the lineup. I think we'll expect him to kill some penalties again. So I don't think there's any doubt that it's going to be very much at the forefront of what they're trying to accomplish.
Dennis, having said that, and where this team is at going into training camp, where do you see this sort of going with the guys on the power play and the penalty kill? Is Matt Hendricks on this opening day roster in your mind?
Well, I would think so. I mean, from what you talk, you know, people that have played with him, played against him, you talk to people in Edmonton, and everybody has nothing but great things to say about Matt Hendricks, what he brings to the room, and what he can bring on the ice. I mean, will he play all 82 games? I don't know. He didn't last year. He's getting up there a little bit, but plays the game hard. As much as anything, sometimes when you get old, older, not old, I'm old, they're not old, when you play the game the way he plays it, you're going to get banged up a little bit. And so that's going to be the challenge there. But I don't see any reason why he wouldn't be. He's a very good face-off guy, and if you're going to try and establish your penalty kill right off the bat, and we do expect to see a lot of special teams. The early going of the exhibition games around the NHL, it's been clear the NHL, you know, and this is something they said going into the preseason, the officials have been told to really watch the slashing. Anything that looks like a slash near the hands, call it. So I think we're going to see lots of penalties. So, you know, fans, don't get all fired up tonight if the Winnipeg Jets are shorthanded six or seven times during the game, because Minnesota's probably going to be as well. I think we're going to see lots of those calls in the preseason, and they've been working on that. They've been working to keep the sticks down, so we'll see what happens tonight. But Matt Hendricks, you know, Steve Mason, I mean, any guys you brought in, I really think you want to try and get them in the lineup as soon as you possibly can.
Dennis, what are the whispers behind the scenes for how close Tucker Poolman might be?
Well, it's going to be interesting. We haven't seen enough of him. I mean, we didn't see him in Penticton until that last game. He's still coming off, you know, the double shoulder surgery. You know, these really has only been, they did testing on Friday. Saturday, Sunday really have been the only days where they've done some stuff. He's looked fine there. You know, they had him paired with Toby Enstrom, and I imagine that'll continue tonight in this game against Minnesota. And now we'll get to really take a look. What makes him interesting is it's not like you're talking about a defenseman who's coming out a junior and is 21 years of age, you know, or a college player that's coming out at 20 or 21, as Jacob Trouba did, or even younger than that. You know, he's 24 years old, so he brings a little more experience. He's got a little more veteran savvy to him than a lot of rookies when they come into a training camp. So it'll be interesting to see. All the skills are there. Skates well, handles the puck well, can shoot the puck. You know, now, can he make that good first pass under NHL pressure? And I know it's still a preseason game, but that's where you start. Can he go back quick enough and get the puck turn and make that first play under NHL pressure? Those are all the things that we're going to see. You don't see the body contact in a training camp that you will in a regular season game or even an NHL preseason game. So that will all start tonight for him, and tonight really will be a new experience for him. I'm sure the game in Penticton that he played, I'm sure the speed of that game at times probably seemed slow to him. Well, that won't be the case tonight. So,
face of the Jets, Dennis Bayak on TSN3 joining us this morning on the Big Show in the Royal Sports Power Hour, 45 minutes past the hour. We all know that Logan Stanley's a project. Where's he at in your mind in his development?
Well, there's another guy we're going to have a look at. I mean, again, in Penticton, I thought he got better as the tournament wore on. I mean, for us, we go back to where we started with this thing about all players being human. Don't think that Logan Stanley doesn't understand that the scrutiny and the how many eyes are looking at him and some of the talk that's going on behind the scenes. Some of the couple of comments that came out of from scouts who love to open their mouths and talk that came out of Penticton to me were just ridiculous. If indeed, you know, that was the case or was someone just making up a story that was trying to add some validity to it. Logan Stanley played 35 games last year, coming off a serious knee injury, won a Memorial Cup, and now you say, okay, well, geez, he played lots in the playoffs. No, he didn't. Windsor lost out in the first round of the playoffs, and then they had time to rest and heal and get ready for a short tournament where they won the Memorial Cup. Logan Stanley needs to play, and he's 19 years old. Is he going to make the Winnipeg Jets as an underage? No. Was the intention ever for him to make the Winnipeg Jets as an underage? No. And so that's what you have to look at. He's going to go back to the Windsor Spitfires, put in a real solid year. Hopefully he can play, stay healthy. But I thought he got better. I thought he played better in the last game in Penticton, from what I understand. I didn't see it, but I thought he got better in game two. And now we'll see what happens tonight. He gets in the lineup tonight. He's been paired with Dustin Byfuglien, who spent some time with Josh Morrissey last year. Byfuglien's going to do everything he can to make Logan Stanley comfortable. And now we'll see. Now we'll get a real good idea of where he is, you know, in his development. But, you know, give this young man some time. And that's been the case right off the bat. I don't think the idea was ever that Logan Stanley was going to play in the NHL as an underage.
Great stuff, Dennis. We appreciate it as always, and have a great broadcast tonight.
Man, take care, and no streaking there, JT.
Let's go streaking to Bell MTS Place tonight. There's a game tonight.
Thanks so much, Dennis.
See
if KFC's open, too.
It's not that you look like him. It's the mannerism. Like, all the movements, all that stuff is bang on.
Wow. Like, even when you just say normal thing, like something just normal, that. Just a couple of words, it's eerie.
I got to take a real good look at myself right now. This is blowing my mind. Time for reevaluation. New focus. Dial it in. How about that wedding scene? Turn around every now and never mind. We'll take a break here on the Big Show and get into your NHL news and notes and what's going on with Joffrey Lupul next on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Our province is packed with shining stars in the world of sports, and every week TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. Nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who's dedicated to making their sport matter. Every Friday on The Big Show, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star. And we could be featuring them soon. TSN1290.ca, once again, is where you do that. Jim Troy and Brandon on the Royal Sports Power Hour on The Big Show here on TSN 1290. We're going to talk some more CFL. Marshall Ferguson is going to join us at the top of the next hour. NHL news and notes time, gentlemen. And this is really interesting to me. Joffrey Leupel on Sunday accused the Toronto Maple Leafs on social media of cheating with the NHL's long-term injury list, but then quickly deleted his post. It was the first time the Maple Leafs used a long-term injury reserve list, the LTIR, subject to any accusations, although there have been suspicions around the league the past two seasons about some of those moves where you put a veteran player who is said to have failed their physical on the list, thereby taking their salaries off the NHL salary cap. It's known as Robidas Island after Stefan Robidas was exiled to the list after training camp in 2015. I believe he works for the Leafs now, doesn't he? Robidas? Got a job in the front office? Yeah.
I doubt he posted anything on social media.
But on the first day of Leafs training camp last week, Leafs general manager Lou Lamoriello announced that Leupel and fellow veteran who they used in the David Clarkson trade, Nathan Horton, failed their physicals. That meant that both will be on the LTIR to start the season. Leupel has one left year in his contract with a cap hit of $5.2 million. However, Leupel, who's 33, claimed on his Instagram account, "I'm ready, just waiting for the call. Ha ha, failed physical. They cheat. Everyone lets them."
And a picture of him snowboarding.
He then quickly deleted it.
That doesn't work in social media universe, right?
Not if you're famous, no.
Someone's going to get it.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, cheating. I mean, you know, when I saw Clark MacArthur was didn't pass his physical, and we heard Ian Mendez discuss about the pinched nerve in his neck and that he did take a hit, or, you know, that whole question thing. Man, I saw a lot of guys get screwed over in that part, like during football, with the whole physical thing, where guys that have played through things, battled through things, and then at some point in time, when maybe no longer you're going to serve the same purpose as in the past, all of a sudden you see a guy fail a physical when nothing's changed physically for him over the last year or two, sort of thing, right? So when I see some of these things, I've always got skepticism for sure as a part of the equation for me. But as far as the Leafs cheating, in quotations, I mean, if you're making use of the rules and stretching them, then I've got no problem with that. But this, certainly Leupel pushing it to the degree that he did, you would expect something to happen here, whether, you know, I don't know if the league gets involved or anything like that, but this will be interesting to see, watch itself play out.
Yeah, there's something shady going on. I don't think you can deny that, but I don't know how healthy Joffrey Leupel is. Like, can he play? If he can play, then he's getting screwed over. That's the only way you can look at this sort of thing. But the Leafs right now have zero cap space dollars. Absolutely not. Like, they are right at the cap limit. And I don't think that includes Joffrey Leupel's LTIR space. Now they have Nathan Horton on there.
They're over. They're the team that's over the most at 4.579. They have to do something by the time the season starts. Unless this is what they do. Like Hossa, when the season starts, these two guys go on and then they get some relief.
Cap Friendly right now has them at zero with Horton on LTIR. So I don't know what if Leupel goes on there, how much space they have. It wouldn't be a whole lot anyways, but I just think if Joffrey Leupel's healthy enough to play, and if he didn't take his physical or whatever's going on there, the NHL has to step in immediately and rectify the situation. I just don't know how healthy Joffrey Leupel is right now.
Well, and he could file a grievance. Like, yeah, the PA if he's physically able to play and he wants to play, the PA should be stepping in on this and he should be doing that. Or is he just simply saying, well, you know, somebody reminded him yesterday that, hey, if you want your money, if you want your $5.2 mil this year. Exactly. Yeah. So, like, who do you side with here? Because I agree. Yeah. I think clearly the Leafs are doing something here.
I know people think it's weird that I do this, but I typically side with organizations in this, having the profound understanding, I believe, that you are a pawn in a chess game as a player. And if the, you know, this, that's just sort of the nature of pro business or pro sports from the experience that I had in observing everything going on here, that, you know, the organizations will do whatever best serves them. And you as a player, you don't, there's really nothing you can do about it. And like rights and all the rest of it, I don't know. Like maybe I don't know. You wonder if Joffrey Lupo, if what he did in taking it to social media, and I'm going to suggest that it wasn't something to push. Like it wasn't a chess move, right? If you delete that from your social media, you're regretful that you did so. So I don't know what he was trying to do. If he was just like angry or anything like that, but. This situation, I'm sure, occurs much more so than just the Toronto Maple Leafs taking advantage of some of the loopholes that exist with it.
So is he just collecting his money then, and he had a moment? Otherwise, let's see a grievance. Let's see you do something about this if you really want to play. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Social media, eh? We'll find out what happens with Lupo and the Leafs as this story will continue to unfold literally this morning as we go forward. We'll talk some CFL. Marshall Ferguson's going to join the Big Show next on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Little Steve Winwood. Guitar riff to Winwood. TSN 1290 is proud to support the fifth and final HSC Foundation Celebrity Human Race. It's your chance to race around Winnipeg, competing in challenges and puzzles with your team's celebrity. On September 22nd and 23rd, that's this weekend, the money raised allows the HSC Foundation to improve care for Manitoba families with research initiatives, cutting-edge medical equipment, state-of-the-art facilities. To learn more or to register, visit TSN1290.ca. The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Preseason starts tonight, 7 o'clock, Bell MTS Place. Will have full pregame coverage with the Manitoba Building Trades pregame show live at 6 p.m. from Boss Pizza City Place. Puck drop at 7 between the Wild and the Jets with Brian Munns and Mr. Paul Edmonds making the call for you tonight. The Huron Windows postgame show is live from BP City Place with Kevin Olszewski as well. We have your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas coming up in this hour. Some Jonathan Davis hockey talk at the bottom of the hour. We'll tee up the Boss Pizza fan line. An hour of your phone calls. Looking forward to that at 9 o'clock. And right now, back to the CFL. We welcome in Tiger Cats play-by-play man and a big part of Marsh and Mello on TSN 1150 in the Hammer. Welcome in Marshall Ferguson on TSN 1290's The Big Show. How are you, Marshall?
I'm good, boys. How are we doing?
We're doing very well for a Monday. And I guess, first and foremost, go ahead.
Just where did you get this, Jeff? He just sent out this tweet saying he's on TSN 1290 where clothing is optional. And they're showing people clapping at the Bomber Stadium. And there's this lady in it. And she must be just wearing a real little halter top or something. But making
yeah,
just...
it was, that was back in whatever week it was. I think week two or three. It was super early in the season. It's funny because I always like to send out the gifts that I create on Twitter before I join you guys or any other radio show around the country to talk ball. And so I was going through my Winnipeg ones a minute ago, and I went, I haven't used this topless one because it feels kind of inappropriate, but I'm like, it's kind of funny in the morning. It was one of those things where as I'm watching the games, it like threw me off because I'm one of those people that's guilty where if you watch enough football, as a lot I'm sure as your listeners do, you kind of stop looking directly at where the ball is going. Like anybody who's watched enough football knows, you start looking at the line player, you start looking at, you know, things that are in the surroundings. So when I was watching that game, Winnipeg-Toronto in the early season, when they threw to break, I wasn't looking at the score bug. I knew what the score was. I was looking at the stands, and I'm trying to find, you know, is there somebody that's funny that I can grab a gif of and tweet that out later on? And as I'm doing it, I look down and I go, that woman does not look like she is wearing a top in the stands at Investors Group Field. So I ended up being able to pull it and use it. But yeah, it was a labor of love being able to find that.
And I'm a guy that likes the little intricacies of jokes. And what's funny about this to me is no one's paying attention to her. They're all like looking at the camera or the field, and they're just giving her a nice round of applause as if somebody sitting naked beside them would be. Not that she's naked, of course, but I get the joke. But everyone's
it
just
like,
hey, we're on
Night
TV.
Live intro.
Exactly. It does. Marshall, what's the latest? Where does it sit? What's going on with the Hamilton Tiger Cats, the CFL, and Johnny Manziel?
As it stands right now, I talked to Dave Naylor at the Hall of Fame, everything that was down at Tim Hortons Field on Thursday night, and he said that he very staunchly believes that there is serious interest in this. I know that the CFL has extended the window a couple of times to be able to figure out whether or not the Tiger Cats can move Johnny Manziel's rights. The thing that I find really interesting is that unlike most, if not all, players that anybody could sign the Canadian Football League, Johnny Manziel has been told, and his people have been told, that if you're going to come to the CFL, we're going to put you through that four-step kind of vetting process where he's going to have to meet with somebody with domestic abuse background. He's going to have a sit-down interview with the commissioner in person. So that's different, right, guys? Because like, if they want to sign Troy Westwood or myself right now, they can just put in a contract to the league office. It gets sent into the football operations people there, and then they sign off on it. But for them to do that with Johnny Manziel, that's why I think this is taking so long, is that what they have to actually do is look at not just the player and not just the amount of money or does it work with the cap. They have to look at the person. And looking at the person is a greatly different conversation, and it requires way more vetting. Because if you go through this, and this is a really interesting part to me, let's say Johnny Manziel is qualified. He's in game shape. He's sober. He wants to be in the Canadian Football League. He's passionate about it. He's okay with the amount of money he's going to get and where he's going to end up playing. And then the commissioner sits down with him and says, nope, I can't do it. I don't trust the guy. And if he does that, then everything we've talked about for the last 3-4 months, whether it's in Hamilton or in Montreal or Toronto or Saskatchewan or anywhere around this country that might be interested in him in any way, all of a sudden it's off the table. I think it would take a lot for that to happen, but as it stands right now, essentially they're just trying to vet whether or not he's going to be able to play in this league at all. And then if we get past that point, then I think what you end up seeing is probably a deal to move him somewhere else to try and get back some assets, but I could be wrong. He could be here in Hamilton, and man, if he comes here, regardless of the vetting that has happened, just because of the Art Briles situation earlier this year, there will be angry people that will call out the CFL.
Hey, I'm just watching this shot over and over again, Macaw on Jerome Messam, man. And like, to me, that's a shot that should be suspendable to me. And then also looking at Mike Riley, they're down by 8. They're on the 10-yard line. It's 3rd and 7. And there's less than 2 minutes left. The blitz by Matt Black. And the crown of his helmet just hammers the mask of Riley. And there's no question whatsoever it's a headshot. I've been saying for a few years now, Marshall, that the CFL and the reffing, it has a problem in not calling headshots. What we saw this weekend was absolutely deplorable.
Yeah, we absolutely did. And I'll tie in something as well, Troy, that I saw in, I think it was the Florida game. It was a college game that I was watching over the weekend where a receiver got up and stumbled. I know there was one in the Denver Broncos game as well last night that was really scary. But like, when people forget why we harp on this and why this is such a big conversation in football right now, it's because you get those scary moments where Jerome Messam should have fallen flat on his face when he stood up, right? Like that, based on the hit that he took. And Mike Riley was not protected, even though we talk about protecting quarterbacks. And Mike Riley has arguably been one of the top two, maybe even three, you know, maximum CFL quarterbacks throughout the majority of the season, even though they have lost their last 5 games. So I'm with you, man. It's something that has to change. And the biggest influencer for me on this is just the way that the game is called from game to game, because we can talk as much as we want about Canadian quarterbacks and, you know, we have to develop from a younger age, and we could say the same thing if we want. It's very flowery to say, well, if we teach the officials to call the game differently, it'll be grandfathered in, and 20 years from now, this won't even be an issue or won't be in question. It'll be the way that the game is played. But seriously, when I watch the way that that game was officiated, all I could think is, how do we possibly protect quarterbacks moving forward or have any consistency if that isn't called? Because that is letter of the law, spirit of the law, in any way that you perceive it. That hit by Matt Black against Mike Riley should have been called, and I understand why Jason Moss was so upset about it. If you're talking about Jerome Messam, that's just a guy trying to make a tackle. Yeah, but I mean, Jerome Messam is going to the ground. So what are we really doing here? Football players are made to be violent, fast, hard hitting, all of that, but they understand where the line is drawn as well. It's like Jack Heck in the fourth quarter against the Tiger Cats on Friday night when he blows up Brandon Banks out of bounds. He turned back towards the sideline and immediately said, my bad. Like, I knew that it was late. I knew it was out of bounds. It was dangerous. I shouldn't have done it. And it was called. That's what should have happened in both of those calls, is the player stands up and says, yeah, I went past the line there. That's my bad. It's a fast, passionate game. I understand it's a bang-bang play. But you have to protect players over everything else. And until they do consistently with the calls on the field, the game's really not going to change all that much.
Marshall Ferguson joining us on the big show this morning, TSN 1290, 12 minutes past the hour, talking CFL. You watched Brandon Bridge alive as he threw three touchdown passes on Friday against the Hamilton Tiger Cats, getting a win for the Riders. Is he the next Canadian quarterback to get a starting job somewhere in the offseason?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, because Brandon Bridge is very much, to me, guys, an incomplete package. He's entertaining, and he's got a big arm. Like, I hadn't actually seen him throw in person since we were essentially in the McMaster High School football camp together back in 2007, at which point he walked up to me and asked me how much weight I could bench, and I was in grade 12, and I told him I don't even know what a bench is, and he went on to tell me that he did 225 eight times. But anyways, I hadn't seen him throw in person in a long time, and when I watched him live in person, I see an absolute cannon of a right arm. I see better accuracy than I had seen from him when he was at Alcorn State, South Alabama, or even in Montreal. So I see there are pieces there that you can absolutely work with. I don't know if it's a starting gig. I don't feel confident enough to be able to say that, because, as we know, there's really only nine chairs, and when the music stops in that game, then all of a sudden I don't think he's going to be able to earn that spot, especially over an American guy, whether we like it or not. But the thing that I love about Brandon Bridge is he has a wonky release. It's a long, extended pull. He's a skinny guy that's, you know, tall, and he doesn't look like he is necessarily going to be able to hold up over time, but he just plays football hard. Like, that's the thing I love about him, and it's the thing that I love about Andrew Buckley, is when you put them in any situation, they find a way to just play good, hard football and try their best to produce. Andrew Buckley made some really nice throws in the second half against the Tiger Cats back in week six in their 60-1 win, and I saw Brandon Bridge make some throws in the first quarter, whether it was wide side outs or curl routes or even, you know, the little post shot that he took over the top into triple coverage. He was inaccurate, but man, did he rip into it. Like, he let the thing fly. And so I don't think he's going to be a starter, but there's a lot of skill that's there with Brandon Bridge that people, I think, kind of want to see more of. And in Saskatchewan, I don't think they have enough faith necessarily in him to be able to use him long term, whether Kevin Glenn is in or out. But I do think that they're going to see more of him throughout the remainder of the season, and that might at that point change the conversation around Brandon Bridge.
Edmonton starting 7-0 and now on a 0-5 run, just kind of snake bit though, right, on these losses?
Yeah, they are. I was saying this morning on our radio show in Hamilton that I could literally make an excuse for probably every loss the Eskimos have outside of the one at home against the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. Like, that to me kind of got everything snowballing. But we were also joking that maybe John Chick is the curse, guys, because John Chick, I mean, hey, he was here when the Ticats weren't winning anything. He goes over to Edmonton and a lot of the same is happening, but in all seriousness, it's confounding, because they got healthier. Not greatly healthy, but they did get healthier over the last while, and they've been losing games. They add Darrell Walker, which should be a massive plus, and that still hasn't really panned out the way that people would expect to. Brandon Zylstra's still producing. I don't really know what they are as a football team right now. Like, I have to seriously go back and look at their last two or three games to figure out what the exact systematic problem is, because as I learned from covering the Ticats at the start of this season, anytime you lose a bunch of games in a row, it's never one thing. It's never, well, Mike Riley sucks, or Jason Moss doesn't know how to call a game, or Carson Walsh should pass the ball less and run the ball more often, or, you know, we need a better offensive right tackle. It's never one thing. It's that people take turns when you lose a bunch of games in a row. And right now, I don't know who is taking those turns, because it seems like everything is fairly smooth. Like, I don't know, Troy, if you get the sense that they're in real trouble, but I don't. Like, I feel like this is a natural part of the season's ebb and flow, and by the time that we hit week 15, 16, 17, I fully expect the Eskimos to look like they did back in week 2 or 3.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting for sure. Right before we let you go, Marshall, what do you think of the Red Blacks coming into Winnipeg this Friday, especially with Trevor Harris and potentially Drew Tate out of the lineup?
That's okay. We can combine them. They are now Drew Harris, because they are both injured shoulder quarterbacks that don't pass the ball very efficiently down the field. If there's one thing that could really throw off what the Ottawa Redblacks are going to be able to do, it's being able to have an efficient, quick-throwing offense with a quarterback that understands the game at a high level. Trevor Harris might not be the sexiest quarterback in the world, even though he does put up big stats, but the one thing that he does is control the game's tempo. He has absolute command at the line of scrimmage. I don't think Drew Tate has that. I saw him live last week against the Tiger Cats in that second half, and he seemed like he's just, that guy is all over the place. Very talented. We understand his background, but he is just not exactly what Trevor Harris is. And if Drew Tate was deemed to be more trustworthy to the Ottawa Redblacks coaching staff and Jamie Elizondo over Ryan Lindley, then how much faith should we have in Ryan Lindley if he gets the start, which it looks like he's going to against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers? I think this is a really good week for Winnipeg to be able to put something together. After having that game in the Banjo Bowl where they rolled it up on Saskatchewan with 48 points, I think Paul Lapolis and Andrew Harris and Matt Nichols, they could just go wild in that. And that's, honestly, at this point in the season, you guys out there in Winnipeg, if you're talking about where you're going to go moving forward, you need that, because maybe you catch Edmonton on a bit of a weak spot after, and then you welcome in the Tiger Cats the week after that. I mean, you start to roll up a couple of wins here. You got Toronto at the back end of the schedule as well, and I think that Winnipeg could be in a real nice spot in terms of playoff positioning and maybe home field.
At TSN underscore Marsh on Twitter, he is the Tiger Cats play-by-play guy and a big part of TSN 1150. Thank you for doing this, sir. Take care, Marshall.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
Thanks so much, man.
We'll get into your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas and Jonathan Davis at the bottom of the hour. All that to come next on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Twelfth caller through at 780-1290 will be our latest qualifier for Hockey Nights in Vegas, brought to you by TSN 1290 and redtag.ca. We're sending five lucky listeners and their guests to Sin City this November, where they'll see the Winnipeg Jets take on the Las Vegas Golden Knights, who played their first preseason game last night.
It looks sharp. Those white jerseys, the white gloves.
You like them? Yeah.
They look sharp, man.
The white gloves. Friday, November the 10th. T-Mobile Arena in Vegas. Jets and Golden Knights will give you two hockey tickets to the game. We'll fly you to and from Las Vegas and four nights accommodation right on the strip. TSN 1290 will also kick in $1,290 cash to help you cover a few extras or go see some shows. Backstreet Boys, Santana, Donnie and Marie, Carrot Top, maybe the Hoover Dam, whatever you'd like to do. Do some golfing, I should say. Listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays at 7:15 a.m. and 8:15 a.m. right here on The Big Show, 12:15 p.m. on the Don Vito Roundtable, and 5:15 p.m. on the Afternoon Ride. You can also watch for bonus chances to qualify online on all our TSN 1290 social media avenues. Winners will be announced Monday mornings on The Big Show. The next one is September 25th, and then October 9th and 23rd. And our final grand prize draw will be November the 6th. For more information, check out tsn1290.ca. Hockey Nights in Vegas, presented by redtag.ca, where Canada shops for great travel deals. And us here at TSN 1290, Mr. Brandon Ruicki, who is our latest qualifier?
Those white gloves are the sharpest things in the NHL. It's Ernie Thiessen.
Ernie!
Thiessen! I was thinking the Big Easy.
Nice.
The Big Earn. The Big Earn. Sometimes when I get up in the morning, Mr. McCracken is already here. Kingpin, Ernie.
I'm not quite sure
how to interpret McCracken.
That.
Ernie!
That's what you call him?
The Big Earn. Had the comb over. Yeah. Another great movie. We talked about old school. Kingpin, another classic. Congratulations, Ernie Thiessen. You are our latest qualifier, along with Ron Carrier. Both gentlemen get a Jets Gear gift card simply for qualifying, and you're now in for a grand prize draw. Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Wild tonight, 7 p.m. Bell MTS Place. We'll have it for you live with Brian Munns doing the analysis and Mr. Paul Edmonds on the play-by-play this evening here on TSN 1290.
How's Vegas going to score? How's Vegas going to score? How about 9 goals in their first exhibition game?
Well,
stick that in your white gloves.
Well.
Just a heck of a statement.
The gloves did half the work there. The white gloves are worth 4.5 right there.
That's right,
and then
man.
Tyler Wong took care of the next three.
Yeah.
Tyler Wong. Lighten it.
Pretty cool stuff, man.
Your mind's changed at all about the Vegas Golden Knights? I still think they're going to be awful.
I don't know. You think they're going to be awful?
Yeah, I do.
I certainly do not think they're going to be awful.
I think they'll be okay. Probably, I mean, they might be a bottom five team in the NHL, but I don't think they'll be an embarrassment at least.
Well, is bottom five awful? Like, is that...
I think if you're competitive.
Yeah.
I think as long as you're competitive, then that's not in the realm of all. Plus, their expectations aren't very high either, right? Like, if they're competitive all year, that's a pretty good win for them.
Interesting. As for tonight's game between the Wild and the Jets, Mr. Paul Maurice was asked, and Adam Lowry is in the lineup tonight, just so you know, and he was asked at training camp this weekend what his expectations are for Mr. Adam Lowry and what he needs, what a next step in Paul Maurice's mind would be for Adam Lowry.
Two steps. I'd like him to continue to get better defensively. A stronger man. He's more powerful on the walls. You know, he separates guys from the pucks. He's turning into that grinder. He's a different kind of guy in terms of offense. And he reminds me, and it's a different style, he reminds me of Adam Graves. I know that's an older player, but I grew up with him, and he scored 50 in the NHL. He doesn't score graceful goals. Gravy never did. He said 30 were in front of the net, 10 off his ass, and the other ones were too ugly to mention. Adam, I think, can develop an offensive game that's not a dangle game, right? Get to the front of the net. So I'd like to see that come. And it may not be in terms of what we ask him to do, but in terms of the wingers that he plays with.
Adam Graves, wow.
Yeah.
And, the 1 year, 93-94, 52 goals. But the interesting thing here about Adam Lowry is, to me, if he's going to receive a position maybe on the second team and standing in front of the net, if he spends some time on the power play again, 15 goals, 14 assists for 29 points in 82 games, not bad at 0.35 points per game, is there a possibility he can eclipse the 20 goals scored?
And I don't think he's a 20-goal guy.
People out there that are Adam Lowry supporters believe he can.
I think he can score 20.
And if he does, then does that change the take on Adam Lowry? A lot of it is he's the fourth line, should be a fourth line center. Jets will be a real serious contending team once enough talent emerges that he bounces down to the fourth line. And I just wonder if he happens to pot 20 this year, does that sort of change that whole storyline?
Well, you mean this year or just in general? Can he score 20 like as his career rolls?
This year.
This year?
Yeah, he's increasing. His point production is increasing for the most part as each year goes by. Certainly from the first two to the third year. And is there another step to be had there where he's able to crank it up?
15 goals last year, 7 in his rookie year, 11 in his rookie year, 7 and then 15. I think he can score 20.
He got I don't know if he's getting much more time than he got last year.
On the
in general,
specifically?
He played a lot of minutes, and I don't think he's playing. I mean, he shouldn't be playing for his power play, but if he's on power play too, I don't see a way he gets to 20. 15's fine.
16:03 for ice time anyway.
What about the greasy?
What he averaged.
The greasy stuff.
Yeah, greasy stuff.
He's scoring greasy goals.
That's his goal. Yeah, that, right.
Like in and around the net, and as Paul Maurice said, a couple off the ass.
That's greasy. That's what we expect from him. He's not going to be sniping.
I don't think he's hit the ceiling. I will have to talk about this as we go to the Boston Pizza fan line, but we will talk more hockey next with Jonathan Davis of West Coast Hockey next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca, and you can also stream us on the iHeartRadio app on all your favorite devices or get a customized playlist to suit your mood or activity. Your music, your station's always free. Download the iHeartRadio app today and stream on, my friends. All of you, stream on. We're going to tee up the Boss Pizza fan line in our next segment, and of course, we will have an hour of your phone calls. Lots to talk about today after a weekend of sports, NFL, CFL, Bombers back at practice today. The Winnipeg Goldeyes will try to stave off elimination in tonight's best of five final. They lost yesterday 5-3 at Shaw Park, and will play game four tonight, looking to force a game five for the American Association Championship. Also, much more to come on a Santa Lucia Pizza game day as the Winnipeg Jets host the Minnesota Wild to kick off their preseason action live tonight at 7 o'clock. right here on TSN 1290. Of course, full pre- and post-game coverage as well, continuing throughout the day as well. We're going to talk some hockey now, and we go to the West Coast. And when we do so, we like to talk on the West Coast with our good friend Jonathan Davis from West Coast Hockey. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Very well. And we've been spending a lot of time with you throughout last year's hockey season and of course, throughout the off season. Are you surprised, like most, that it's here already?
Well, no, I'm surprised. I'm happy
excited.
No matter how. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not the most compelling stuff. I mean, I watched LA and Vancouver on Saturday and Vegas and Vancouver yesterday. And so it was just interesting to see some hockey and to kind of get a sense of, you know, maybe some of the guys that we need to, you know, that we'll pay attention to. But, you know, look, that Saturday LA-Vancouver game was a penalty box trip fest, and not just because, not dirty hockey, just, you know, guys getting adjusted to, you know, the new rules on slashing and just, you know, some just careless play. So, but nonetheless, it was hockey, and it was good to see.
Is there a chance here that Arizona's going to be considerably better than most people give them credit for?
Considerably better, you know. I think they may be better, but you know, I like the deal that they made yesterday to get Jason Demers. I'm not sure why, you know, Dale Tallon was dumping that salary. You know, the rumor was that he tried to get Erica Branson and ended up getting himself a bottom six forward in Jamie McGinn. So I like the deal for Arizona. I like what they're building on the back end now with Demers and Charmelson and Oliver Ekman-Larsson. So it definitely gives them some stability. And then you have Antti Raanta and Nett. So, yeah, I mean, look, you always want to build from the back out, and they're definitely in a better situation than they were a year ago. So, yeah, they could make life a little tougher in a crowded Pacific Division.
Jonathan, what are your impressions of the Vegas Golden Knights, the roster they have? I know camp has to go and some roster cuts and what they might look like. It will be different on opening night than they do right now. But what are your realistic expectations for the Las Vegas Golden Knights?
Well, I'm still trying to figure out outside of James Neal, you know, and possibly Jonathan Marchessault, you know, where they're going to get their scoring from. But in both those guys, you don't have centers, so you got to find them someone to get them the puck. Very strong on the back end. I'm surprised that they haven't moved a defenseman still, with I think what they still have 11 defensemen back there. So, you know, maybe there's still another deal to be made. But, you know, I think they'll be competitive and maybe just good enough to lose on most nights.
Your thoughts on Doughty's comments a little bit ago here and the possibility of him ending up somewhere else?
Yeah, no possibility. You know, that's just Drew being Drew. And you know, the one thing with Drew Doughty is that he just does not have a filter. And so I think, you know, look, Drew just, he loves to play hockey. But the idea that realistically that he ends up somewhere outside of Los Angeles and, you know, the people in Toronto are starting to salivate, I give that maybe 1 or 2%. You know, look, I really feel that, you know, look, in talking to some people from the Kings organization, you know, I think that, you know, they find it, you know, and their conversations with Drew, I just don't think that that's something that's going to happen. It's just, you know, Drew was talking with Ken Campbell, respected reporter from the Hockey News, I think it was, and, you know, he kind of gave Ken something that he maybe wanted to hear, but there's no question that, look, Drew wants to win. And he's a rink rat, and hockey is all he knows. But I would expect to see Drew sign a max deal come July 1st of 2018.
And I agree with you, Jonathan. But should they deal him? Like, even though they don't want to, and he doesn't want to go, but is that the way to rebuild that team?
No, that's the way to set yourself back. There is no question. This is, you know, look, when you look at how you have to build a cup contender, and look, they're not that far. You know, they're still in good shape, guys. You know, with Drew back there, you've got Kopitar and Carter down the middle, and you've got Jonathan Quick in net. And so, and there are building, you know, you've got supporting cast around them with Tyler Toffoli and Tanner Pearson up front. And you still, you know, and I think they're, They're expecting a rebound year from Jake Muzzin. So it's a team that's not very far off. Moving Drew would just set this team back, you know, two or three steps, because there is not a number one defenseman that they have in their system, and you just don't trade away guys like that. They're not at that point. You know, maybe 3 years down the road, four years or 5 years down the road, maybe, but you're not trading Drew Doughty. Doesn't make sense.
JD, the Oilers are the second best favorite to win the Stanley Cup this year. How high are you on the Oilers?
Well, I mean, you've got arguably the best or the second best player in the NHL right now, so always high when you've got Connor McDavid on your team. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see, you know, how this team handles the success that they had last year. And I think that they'll be more of a target on their back. But, yeah, I mean, they're a very talented team. And when you look at especially the rest of the Pacific Division guys, and the health of the Anaheim Ducks, especially on the back end, I would expect the Oilers to be challenging for top spot in the Pacific Division this year. So, yeah, no, still very high on them. I'd like to see them tighten up that back end. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see, you know, Todd McClellan's a great coach. And so if anyone can help to make a team even better than they were the year before, and continue to develop the talent they have, he's the guy, especially with the job that I think, you know, he doesn't get enough credit for what he did in developing guys like Logan Couture and Joe Pavelski. So, yeah, no, very, very bullish on the Edmonton Oilers.
Jonathan, I always love to get outsiders' opinions, and not outsiders, but people outside the market opinion on the Jets. So where do you see them this year, and are they a playoff team in your mind?
Well, I think as we talked a couple weeks ago, you know, in my opinion, this is a team that has the fifth best goaltending in the division. But there's so much talent up front on this team. It's just, you know, for them to make the playoffs, who do they knock out? You know, is Chicago on the downside? You know, do we still believe in Nashville? Dallas is better. I like what Winnipeg has. I wish they'd be a little stronger on the back end, and you know they have to play smarter. They can't force their goalies to make, you know, to win and steal. You know, I think more than five or six games. They can't. That's just not the way this team is built. So if they can play smarter hockey than they have in years past, they have a chance to take one of those playoff spots. They're a great team to watch. I think that they're offensively, they can hold up with just about anybody, I think, in the division. It's just a matter of, you know, they've got to be just smarter in their own zone, and they've just got to be smarter in not taking penalties to put themselves into situations where they're forcing Connor Hellebuck and Steve Mason to win them games.
JD, I don't know if we remember this well enough as fans, but to me it's not very often that you take pieces coming in, add them, and they add that sum individually that they are, comes to the team and adds to it to that same degree with Hitchcock, Radulov, Hanzel, Mathot, Bishop. How much better will the Stars be this year?
Well, I think, you know, look, they'll be better. You know, Ben Bishop, I think, will make them better. He's got to stay healthy. You know, that's always been a problem. Mark Mathot, I think, will definitely make that, you know, the rest of that blue line core better. There's no question. I still look back at the year that when Eric Karlsson won the Norris a couple of years ago. You know, he was a minus player until Mark Mathot returned to that back end from injury, and then Eric Karlsson took off. So I think that, you know, what he can do for that defense will be phenomenal. Alex Radulov, it'll be interesting to see, you know, how he responds after, you know, he was so comfortable in Montreal. Now he gets a big contract. You know, how does it change him? It in theory, it should make a good offense even better. You know, a healthy Tyler Seguin and a healthy Jamie Benn definitely makes this team better. I still think that Hitch is the big X factor, because he can just wear players down. And if he cannot wear players down, then yeah, look, there's no reason why this team shouldn't find itself back, you know, in the playoffs, you know, where they were 2 years ago. But I don't know. I still look at what happened in St. Louis last year with Hitch, and it was a really tough situation until he left. So it'll be interesting. But they are definitely better, and watch out, you know, because I think, you know, teams, you know, like Chicago and St. Louis, you know, they definitely have them in their rearview mirror, and they know they're coming breathing hard on them. And so, yeah, I think that there's a realistic shot that they make the playoffs and unseat one of those teams that was in there last year.
Jonathan Davis joining us on The Big Show, TSN 1290, 44 minutes past the hour. What's your read on the Montreal Canadiens this year?
Well, I mean, look, they're, with Carey Price, there's no reason to think that they can't be a 100-point team again. This is a team, I think, that is in many ways built, you know, for the regular season. I love Jonathan Drouin. I think that he is a guy that is a game changer. Put the puck on his stick, and, you know, he doesn't need any help. I've watched him enough to see that, you know, he creates his own offense. And I think that, you know, that the question still, you know, for Montreal is the back end. And, you know, do they have enough parts back there, you know, to make them a cup contender? They're definitely a playoff contender. But I still think that there's some missing pieces, you know, between down the middle, you know, who's the number one center? Will Drouin, who they say will start the year at center, will he be effective? Alex Galchenyuk, not a center. And they're weak in some key areas, but I think that right now that they're still a team that is built to be successful during the regular season. I just don't know if they've got a team that's successful to make a cup run.
Great stuff as always, Jonathan. Thanks for your insight and your time. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Always a pleasure, guys. Have a good one.
Thanks so much, JD.
At West Coast Hockey on Twitter is where you can follow Mr. Jonathan Davis. We'll tee up the Boss Pizza fan line next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day as the Jets host the Minnesota Wild live from Bell MTS Place right here on TSN 1290 at 7 o'clock. The Manitoba Building Trades pregame show live from Boston Pizza City Place with Kevin Olszewski at 6 p.m. Winnipeg Jets and the Minnesota Wild here on Windows postgame show live from BP City Place following the final whistle. Jim Tolf, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you on The Big Show. Teeing up the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Here's what head coach Paul Maurice feels the bubble players need to do, not only tonight, but through training camp.
That he's consistent with who he is. What is it that you're selling to our team that you do? So a role player means just that. There's a certain role that we're looking for. 5-on-5, everybody plays the same game, but if you're a penalty killer or your power play in that role, you know, can you excel? Are you better than the next guy in that role?
And that role will be looked at for several players tonight as we have the lineup for the Wild. Connor Hellebuck will start in net. Eric Comrie backs up. On defense, Tucker Poolman, Ben Chiarot, Dustin Byfuglien, Toby Enstrom, Nelson Noje, and Logan Stanley will all be in the lineup. And several veterans tonight. Also, a guy trying to make the team in Michael Scarbosa, Adam Lowry, Brian Little, Blake Wheeler, Nikolai Ehlers, Patrick Laine, Joel Armia, Brendan Lemieux, Mark Scheifele, Marco Dano, Kyle Connor, and Matthew Perreault will all dress up tonight against the Wild. What do you expect?
Well, I have no expectations. What I do in exhibition games, every time Kyle Connor's on the ice, I'll be watching with intent. And same with Brendan Lemieux. I like to isolate guys. And then on the back end, eyes will be strong on Logan Stanley and Tucker Poolman as well. I like watching the young fellas trying to break in specifically, just isolate them and see how they fare out there.
Yeah, I think, you know what, the one thing that would make me happy and I wouldn't even care about anything else is when the power play comes out there and Patrick Laine is on his one-time spot. If that happens, hey, play Matt Hendricks 30 minutes if you want to. I'll be happy. Like, that alone would make me happy enough. But, yeah, I'm looking for special teams because I think Paul Maurice will tip his hand a little bit as to who he values early on and who kind of has the front-running role for some of those spots. And it could also maybe indicate who has a chance of cracking the bottom forward core. Because in that clip there, he made it pretty clear that, you know, there's going to be certain roles on this team, and it looks like one of those roles will be being a penalty kill forward in that kind of last five forward spots. So I'll be watching that. And Connor Hellebuyck, what does he look like after a summer? You know, he's had a full summer of training and improvement, and I'm interested to see how he looks in the nets and if he's maybe quicker, just kind of what changes he made after an off season and after, you know, having a rookie season where he probably realized some of the shortcomings he might have had in his game.
I'm very interested to see Connor Hellebuyck tonight throughout training camp, and because I do believe he will continue to develop and get better. I'm interested to see where he's at sort of tonight as exhibition season or preseason gets underway. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers, we'll also talk about that in the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. They return to practice today off Hall of Fame weekend and their bye. Mike O'Shea goes into the Hall of Fame, spent the weekend in Hamilton being inducted, and then, of course, the game on Friday between the Saskatchewan Roughriders and the Tiger Cats. Bombers host the Ottawa Redblacks this Friday at Investors Group Field. Your early thoughts on the Blue Bombers getting back to it at 8-3 hosting the Redblacks?
Well, early thoughts are if it's Ryan Lindley behind center for the Ottawa Redblacks, the Bombers, you hope they don't feel this way, but it certainly looks like it's a bit of a free one here. Come home, tie Jeff, and after your bye week, and absolutely obliterate the Redblacks. Don't get all fat and sassy with that spiffy 8-3 record and take it for granted, but come out here and just absolutely destroy the Redblacks is what I'd like to see. And early indications are when you see Drew Trait standing on the sideline with a sling, you know, I don't think that we'll see Trevor Harris back either, so expect Ryan Lindley, I dare say.
I'm not comfortable with any quarterback facing the Bombers. I'm sorry. honestly, though, like, look at the two games the Bombers played against Montreal. Darian Durant probably had his two best games of the season, of the three.
He did, yeah.
And what did they do yesterday? And what did they do the week before that and the week before that? Like, the Bombers secondary, have they stopped anyone? So that Ryan Lindley, I mean, you're talking about a guy, too, with NFL experience, and he's a big dude with a big arm. So I'm not, hey, I don't care who's that quarterback for Ottawa. I'm not looking at this one as a freebie. It should be, but I don't think you can look at how the Bombers' defense has played against teams this season and say, yep, that should be an easy one for us here.
The Winnipeg Goldeyes host the Wichita Wingnuts in Game 4 of the American Association Final. We'll get your thoughts on that, too, especially if you're at the game yesterday. The Goldeyes lost 5-3 and now face elimination tonight at Shaw Park as the Goldeyes try to make it back-to-back titles for the American Association. Should be a great night of ball at Shaw Park tonight.
Yeah, I saw Scott Taylor tweeted out a picture yesterday of it was, I think, at the bottom of the first inning, and the lineup still substantial. People buying tickets at Shaw Park. Let's fill the park up. Go have a bunch of fun. Take care of these wing nuts, son of a biscuits, and go have the boys. Hey, man, we were talking last week that this, let's hope there's all kinds of drama involved in the series. And how much more drama can you get than having to win the next two games to hoist or to grab a championship? It's perfect. Let's go do it.
And also NFL Week 2 wraps up tonight with Monday Night Football. The Detroit Lions in 1-0 Detroit Lions in New York to take on the 0-1 Giants. Your thoughts on Week 2? We talked about some of the big games like Atlanta, Green Bay. We talked about Dallas, Denver. I touched on Seattle, San Francisco. The Kansas City Chiefs beat the Philadelphia Eagles in what was probably one of the better games in Week 2. 27-20 at home. Two things stood out to me. Carson Wentz continues to look very good for the Philadelphia Eagles. But Travis Kelce, who has been known to take dumb, undisciplined penalties, took another one again yesterday, and this time Andy Reid publicly got into his face and reamed him out on the sidelines, and it didn't seem to affect him. This is building up and has been for a while in my mind, one of the most talented tight ends in the NFL, but has a major, major attitude problem with the fact that he can't stop taunting and rubbing this in other people's faces and costing his team, which is totally against any philosophy Andy Reid has as head coach.
Yeah, and I mean, you can take it so long as the flags aren't flying. And Kelce, you see, too many flags. And week one, I think there were two 15-yarders, or for sure one. Like, it's just he was a clown upon arrival. And guys like that, from everything I've seen, cats like this just don't change. Once you're a clown, man, or you come in as a clown, they're not very often does the athletic contribution through production, to me, outweigh what that does to the heart of a locker room. I don't like cats like that at all.
Yeah, and I was watching that game, and I thought, Andy Reid's got to bench his ass right now. But then Travis Kelce runs in the winning touchdown from 20 yards out, leaping over two defenders, right? Like, that's the problem. Outside of Gronkowski, he's the best tight end in football, yeah. Right? So you bench him, but then who do you have that 6'3" and 270 that can run like a receiver and leap over DBs into the end zone?
Well, and that's why I bring it up, because I saw this building and I just thought, you know, well, he'll fall into line and Andy Reid, and he's still very talented. Yesterday was the first time I thought this might not go well in Kansas City much longer with the Chiefs and Travis Kelce. Your thoughts on that? NFL, CFL, Bombers return to practice, and of course, Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. What are you expecting tonight? What are you looking for specifically between the Jets and the Wild on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day? Anything and everything on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show on a Monday, 3 minutes past the hour. Supposed to be nice out. It was chilly this morning, I'll be honest. Put the shorts on. Might be the last day.
Really? I'll wait till the snow flies.
It was funny.
It was chilly.
I got here today, and our friends at Virgin, East Burpee, LTI, and Chrissy all had hoodies on and pants, and they were like, East Burpee just looked at me like he does and says, in his fashion, "Guy of summer, shorts. Guy that's, loves summer."
That studio's different down there, though, bruh. They got the windows. They got ventilation. This place turns into some sort of a steam box.
That's true.
Right?
It's a whole new life at the end of the hall.
Yes,
it's
is.
A different dimension when you walk down
windows.
There.
I wonder what that's like.
Down here.
The Boss Pizza fan line is wide open, 780-1290 on a Santa Lucia Pizza game day. We have the roster here. We'll get into that, and we were wondering your thoughts on what you're looking for at Jets camp. We talked about Steve Mason's comments about his relationship and getting to know Connor Hellebuyck, and of course, him almost quitting hockey when he was in Columbus prior to the trade to Philadelphia. We heard from Dustin Byfuglien today. We're going to hear from Paul Maurice on his expectations for Dustin Byfuglien. Maurice joined us on The Big Show Friday live from Bell MTS Iceplex and gave us some insight into his relationship with Mr. Byfuglien. But before we get to any of that, by the way, 780-1290, if you want to weigh in on the conversation, talking Bombers, CFL, NFL Week 2 as well. I wanted to let you know this. You wanted it back, and we cave. TSN 1290 wants to better your basement with a host of cool add-ons. This time there are two caves to choose from, the Man Cave or the Mam Cave. The Man Cave this year includes a $500 men's Burton Gear shopping spree from Alter Ego Sports. Pizza night for 10, courtesy of Boston Pizza. Two tickets to the upcoming UFC Fight Night, December 16th at Bell MTS Place. A Winnipeg Jets guys night out, including two tickets to an upcoming 2017-18 home game at Bell MTS Place. And a customized Winnipeg Jets hockey jersey puck party. And if that wasn't enough, a Rink Water Nice Rink, Rink in a Box, the industry standard for outdoor rink starter kits. Now, the Man Cave includes, which is new this year, a $500 women's Burton gear shopping spree from Alter Ego Sports, a pizza party for 10 at Boston Pizza, two tickets to see Shania Twain's Now Tour May 13th at Bell MTS Place, a Winnipeg Jets girls night out, including two seats for an upcoming 2017-18 home game at Bell MTS Place, and a customized Winnipeg Jets hockey jersey, and Rink Water Nice Rink, Rink in a Box, the industry standard for outdoor rink starter kits. So we have a Man Cave this year and a Mam Cave. Select your cave of choice online right now at tsn1290.ca. We'll randomly draw a winner for each prize package on Monday, October 30th. Once again, tsn1290.ca is where you can start entering that officially right now. It opened at 9 a.m. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Paul Maurice had these thoughts on his expectations for Dustin Byfuglien this year.
I'd like him to be part of that group that plays. They all have an offensive gift, right? I think all those guys can make plays. I'd like them to build the same patience. What I want out of Dustin Byfuglien, when you write this, this is not a statement of Dustin, is for all the entire team to show some real confidence and some real patience in our ability to score goals. That if we do the other parts and we're patient in the game, that doesn't mean sitting back and that doesn't mean casual. I mean, we won't play a hard game and be on the puck. But put ourselves in a position that we don't have to chase the game. So you've got probably Blake Wheeler, Scheif, and Dustin Buff on our captains want to win real bad, right? And then and Buff's getting older, and Blake, they want to win that night real bad. So you get down a goal, they're looking to get this thing back to even. You get down two, and we're chasing the game. It's on for him. So he goes to full offensive mode. It's what I think Tyler Myers did for a lot of years in Buffalo, right? They're chasing the game an awful lot. So we want to put all our back end in a position that is just confident, safe game. It's not confident, smart game. Pick your spots where you can let that talent go.
Yeah, be smart, right? And the thing is, I don't, you know, when we talked to Paul Maurice there and saying how, like, the pushing that Dustin Byfuglien was doing last year and people relating that or talking about his minutes or at least giving him the out of it because of the minutes. And I just so strongly and vehemently disagree with that. I don't understand it. And even from a time perspective, if you're in the second period down by two, why you're taking wild risk to me doesn't make any sense. If you're at the 10-minute mark in the third period and down by two, that's like situationally that makes sense to me. But if you're in the second period, first period for crying out loud, there's all kinds of game left. I just have a little bit of trouble with the lack of connection to brain in some of what transpired last year and some of the reasons and excuses we're hearing for it.
Can I be really honest with you? I don't understand what you don't understand about playing 6 to 7 minutes less will help improve your own game. To me, when you're fatigued, that's when you make mental lapses. That's when you're not as sharp. That's when you just don't have as much effort as you may have if you're not as fatigued.
So let me ask you this. Do you think by when you're mentally fatigued, like you think you're mentally fatigued out there for a while, so you make poor decisions as in joining the rush when it would be best to hang back?
No. I think that when you're fatigued, that's when you make more mistakes than when you're fully, you know, energized.
What kind
and
of
alert.
Mistakes?
Well, all kinds of mistakes. No. I think that if you're in front of the net and you're battling and you're tired, you're not going to battle as hard as you want to because you don't have the energy. I think that when you're trying to reach for a guy or maybe cut off the angle and you're fatigued, you don't have the energy to get there on time. And I think mentally, I think when you're tired, your brain doesn't function as alert as it does, and so you just make more mistakes. That's why I think with less ice time, I think he'll be better.
I have been really tired in a number of different sports. I don't find my decision-making is diminished. I maybe don't have the heart to push my body, right? That old, my favorite saying of all time, and especially as it applies to sport, that fatigue makes cowards of us all. But to me, if I'm in situations where I'm on the ice for 30 minutes, I'm going to be smart enough prior to being tired to know that I can't push the pace of play and be rushing up the ice and then having to get my ass back to play my defensive role, which is my primary reason I'm on the ice. And so I'm not going to be pushing up the ice so often and as many times that make myself so tired that lead to the situations where I'm not able to fulfill my responsibilities and such. That's what I didn't understand about Dustin Byfuglien last year. If you're on the ice that much and you know you're going to be called on that much, why don't you play a smarter, more conservative game?
And we'll get to Mike in just a second here, but I think Paul Maurice hit it on the head, where the Jets and Byfuglien can help themselves out by not being down one or two goals going into third.
Yeah,
every 2 to 3 games. Like it was so many times last year that they found themselves trailing either early on or going into the third period, and that's when the team showed a lack of maturity and a lack of patience, and they just like the second they were down a goal into the third, it was like all hockey logic went out the window. And it was, we got to score with 15 minutes left no matter what to get back into this game, when more realistically it's play the first 10 or so minutes out, and then once that clock starts to go down, that's when you can start to take your chances. I think if the Jets can, I mean, hey, leads would be great, but just be tied going into late in these games and you might see a different Dustin Byfuglien play the game.
It's really weird to me that 30-year-old men are pushing like that in the first 5-10 minutes of the third period, panicking, needing a goal like that.
Well, I just think they're looking for opportunities more so than if they had a lead, or and when they see an opportunity, I mean, until you take it, you don't, there's ways to judge, but I think that when you're looking for opportunities, I don't think you judge that this is a better opportunity than I might find later in the game or not. You just look and you make an assessment and you judge. It's an interesting conversation. I like it. Boss Pizza Fan Line 780-1290. Mike, you're kicking us off today on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
Morning, guys.
Morning.
My biggest thing today, what I'm going to be looking at, is how four of the forwards play. Scarbosa, Lemieux, Dano, and Connor. I'm going to be watching those guys to see who has the best shot of making it for the team, like the start to make the team. And I think today's game will tell you pretty much who will be progressing farther and who will be regressing and gone.
Yeah, I'm interested to see in all those guys. Like I think Kyle Connor, I mean, I want to see what he has, but I do think that he's probably ready for the next step. Scarbosa, Lemieux, and
Dano.
Dano is another interesting one to see. Like, this is a big preseason for him, this training camp, I think.
Scarbosa is a guy who's hardly ever even mentioned, right? He's not older. He's like 25 years old and hasn't played a whole bunch, 48 games to his credit. And so it'll be interesting. 10 points in those 48 games. He hasn't not a guy that's been brought up very often. So a fair point to make to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, we haven't really seen too much of him in game action, but I'd be more willing to give him a chance at a fourth line center role than someone like Matt Hendricks. So I mean, if he has a big preseason, maybe he can be a guy that squeaks onto the opening night roster. And Marco Dano right now, he's on the outside looking in. Like, if you look at the way the Jets have structured their training camp squads and practice sessions and stuff, there's an NHL practice group and there's the bubble group. And I was surprised to see Dano in the bubble group. So he has to have a big preseason, not only just to impress the coaching staff, but he's fighting for an NHL salary right now. And it's gonna take for him a monster couple of games here to maybe squeak his way back into the conversation.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Mike. We appreciate it on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Dano is very interesting, that's true, and the camp he has. And, I mean, we've talked about him at length. We did it all last season. What are your expectations for him, and where do you think this goes? He's now on his third National Hockey League team.
I thought he was playing at a real good clip before he got injured last year. And after that, I never really thought that he had an opportunity to get back in. When I hear Paul Maurice talk and saying that he's got to work his way back into the lineup with Tanev and Thorbjornen, it makes me wonder if behind closed doors, like within the room, if there's something going on from more of an attitude sort of standpoint than an on-ice thing. I always thought when he's out there, the guy is a fire hydrant. He's always like engages physically. Looks like he's very responsible defensively to me. This is one element and aspect of the team that mystifies me. The relationship that he seems to have with Paul Maurice, and I guess we'll just see how it plays out here.
For me, using the eye test and analytically, I don't know if there's a guy that can be a better fourth line winger on this team than Marco Dano. Honestly, like he does, he plays the physical game. He wins the puck battles. He's just tenacious. He's like a Tasmanian devil on the forecheck, and he's got some pop in his offensive game. So the only logical thing I can look at is say it was something off ice, like Troy said, whether it's conditioning, attitude, I don't know, because from what I see and what the numbers say, he could be a valuable part of this team. But for whatever reason, he's got a long way to go this camp.
So let's hypothetically, because we don't know, say it is something off ice. Does that change your opinion of him? Well, like, say he doesn't practice well or whatever it is.
Yeah, well, whatever it is, and if it is off ice, I have absolutely no clue what it would be. I would be looking at Paul Maurice trying to put this into play to, you know, sometimes coaches will use these types of tactics to get a guy to jumpstart a guy or to, you know, to really sort of spiritually smack him almost to wake him up to fall into line. But it is when you got a guy over the last, since he's been a Winnipeg Jet and he's averaged 0.32 points per game, and you're talking that he's got to work his way back into the fourth line when you got guys out there at 0.07, 0.09 points for extended periods of time per game, it is absolutely mystifying to me. And it it looks like it absolutely must be something that has it's not related to what he does on the ice, but it's an just complete mystery to me.
Yeah, I still think they're high on him. It's just it's interesting, and like we say, that's why we delve into this, and it'll be very interesting training camp for Marco Dano, who is in the lineup tonight on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Thanks for the call, Mike. If you want to weigh in on the conversation or anything else you want to talk about, the Boss Pizza fan line is open, 780-1290 next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. If you want to weigh in on the conversation, text us at 1290-90 as well with standard message rates applying. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you on The Big Show. Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day as the Minnesota Wild are in town as the Jets kick off the first of seven preseason games. Busy week for them, four games this week. The Oilers are in town again on Wednesday. Continuing the conversation, I guess around Marco Dano, and he'll be in the lineup tonight. And on defense, the pairings will be, it looks to be Dustin Byfuglien and Logan Stanley, Nelson Noje and Ben Chiarot, Toby Enstrom, and Tucker Poolman will play his second game of the preseason. He had one game at rookie camp at the rookie tournament in Penticton. Interesting to see Tucker Poolman and Logan Stanley. And interesting comments from Dennis Bayak about Logan Stanley and pointing out that you know, some of the reports coming out of Penticton weren't favorable to him. Some scouts weighing in publicly and basically making the point of he played 35 games last year. Like, that's not a lot for a guy who was expected to be 2 to 4 years away anyway. And then you basically cut that 1 year into a third of a season. I'll be interested in watching Logan Stanley as well.
Yeah, baptism by fire tonight, baby. And some, you know, a lot of negative comments on him. But we'll be watching this with a clean slate and just see how he's able to handle himself out there and skate with some of the upper echelon talent.
Back to the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Who's next?
Jonesy.
Jonesy, go ahead, sir.
Hey, guys. Just was wondering what your predictions, all three of you, on the third line and the fourth line, which six guys there and what, say, extra forward, what might we carry? I'll hang up and listen to your answer.
Well, yeah, thanks, Jonesy. Prediction for the lineup, especially the third and fourth line.
So is this a prediction, what we think the Jets are going to do or what we would like to see happen? I guess if you're saying prediction, you're asking what we think the Jets will have there for opening day. And if that's the case, I'm going to go putting some hope in that Kyle Connor is able to make that second line beside Little and Wheeler, and I think that's probably a stretch, but I'm gonna keep that as my hope and go Perreault, Lowry, Armia, and then Kopp, Hendricks, Matthias is what I think that they'll start for the fourth line.
Yeah, I think the top nine, however you want to slot those lines in, I think the top nine is close to being set.
Whether Connor's on the third and
exactly. So then you're looking at a battle between Matthias, Kopp, Hendricks, Dano, and Patan. Likely for those five spots there.
We know organizationally how they feel, even like specifically about Patan and Dano, that they have a bit of a mountain to climb here in camp.
Yeah, I don't see a way Kopp is not on the fourth line, whatever role that might be. It would take a pretty weak camp for Matthias, I think, to bump him out, although I kind of wonder a little bit about if he could be maybe like a surprise cut or trade or demotion. Yeah, I think Dano and Patan are probably your extra forwards to start the season. It feels like from everything we've heard that Matt Hendricks has a spot, that it's basically his to lose at this point.
Do you think they carry two D-men or two forwards?
Two forwards.
Two forwards, I would one say extra yes. D. Yeah. I agree. I think Kyle Connor makes a team. I have him on the second line, but I'm not sure they'll do that. But it'll either be Perreault or Connor. With Perreault either on the second or third, or Connor on the second or third with Lowry and Armia. And I think the bottom line to start the season is going to be Matthias, Kopp, and Dano or Hendricks. And I would presume maybe Hendricks in there, and Kopp can play the wing as well. So Those are my predictions for the fourth line as well. I agree with you guys. I think Patan goes down. I think they start the season with him, with the Manitoba Moose. I don't know if they keep him around just in the case of getting more playing time. And then Dano is probably maybe the extra forward.
Will be interesting tonight just to see if they, you know, do they have Connor out there with Little and Wheeler? How is that going to be? Where is he going to be situated tonight?
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
I don't like him with Lowry and Armia. I don't know. I'd rather see him up in the lineup in the sense that I think he'd be better insulated with. Mm-hmm. I guess in this case it would be Little and Ehlers with how the lineup's shaking there. I'd rather have him with some skilled guys and some veteran guys who have been there before, and then have Mathieu Perreault kind of be the play driver on that third line.
You're giving up on the line, Shifley Ehlers? Because of what you've seen so early?
I am going to give up on it. I don't want to, but.
I can't give up on that yet.
It's my dream.
I'm right there with Wicks. They put those three guys, and Wheeler is no slouch. That's for darn sure.
But to me,
hotline 2.0, I said last year, of Line A, Shifley, Ehlers, like just let the reins go with those guys.
Yeah, I don't know where that's going. It's interesting. I'll bring this in tomorrow. We'll discuss about it too.
Especially if you're gonna doesn't having Little and Wheeler on the second line give you the better opportunity to push Connor up to that second line instead of having Ehlers back there?
Absolutely, it does. To me, Paul Maurice is a guy that you sort of have to earn something. So you make the team, they want you to succeed, but maybe starts on the third line. I would like to see him on the second line and just put, because also I like the idea of Perreault with Lowry, the offense he can help provide that line, and also the grittiness and the toughness from Perreault that you're just not going to get from Kyle Connor.
Oh, when you think shutdown, like to have Perreault, Lowry, Armia, that's a fun line. Spectacular.
Those are our thoughts, Jonesy. We'll get yours next and more on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, when the Big Show continues on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290, the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Don Vito Roundtable with Kevin O. Afternoon Ride with Hustler and Rick Ralph. And prior to that, at 2 is a Gondola Pizza warm-up. And, of course, we'll have full Manitoba Building Trades pregame show live from BP City Place with Kevin Olszewski. Jets and Wild at 7 right here on TSN 1290. And then the Huron Windows post-game show. Back to the Boss Pizza Fan Line, Jim, Troy, and Brandon. And Adam, you're on the Boss Pizza Fan Line. Go ahead, sir.
Morning, guys. How you doing?
Good, thanks.
Kyle Connor, I think he's got to get in the top 6. And also, let's not forget, last year they started the year, Lowry was a fourth-line center. Only lasted about half a period, though.
But that
wouldn't be out of the realm of possibilities again, hey?
Well, I do think he's destined there eventually when this team gets deep enough.
What if he gets 20 goals, though? What if he's sniffing around 20 goals? He's 15 last year.
I don't see him. How does he go from 15 to 20 this year?
Well, a little bit more grease?
I don't know. I think you're looking for a little pixie dust to see 15 to 20, to be honest, boys. Especially, like, you think he's going to get more than the 16 minutes of ice time he got and more power play time? I see him getting less in both zones.
Why would he get less, man? If ultimately Paul Maurice, if it can be seen as a tool, or if the team is finally deep enough to up the fourth line, right, up to about 10 minutes. If you want to take away some of that 5-on-5 stress on the top 6, why would you take away ice time from the third
line? If you got the top two lines right around 40 minutes, playing 20 each, roughly, and like you said, the fourth line's playing somewhere around 10, that doesn't leave 16 minutes for Adam Lowry.
But what if he's playing with Kyle Connor or Mathieu Perreault and Joel Armia, and Joel Armia gets better? And Connor comes in, or Perreault provides some more offense down there.
If they
find some more chemistry, I don't think it's out of the realm to find 5 more goals.
I don't think he's getting the same power play time that he did last year, though, where he did the majority of his damage in goal scoring.
And that was, he was on the first team power play, right? Yeah, you hope.
So if he's on the second,
he's on the second.
If he's on the second power play unit, he's not gonna crack 20, which is fine. It's like it's not a disappointment of a season if he doesn't get 20, right? Like,
yeah.
If he gets 15 goals, if he gets 15 goals and 15 assists, that's not the worst season in the world for Adam Lowry.
He sort of developed into what he was in junior, where when he won WHL Player of the Year, he had 45 goals and 45 assists. He's got 15 goals and 14 assists last year, 29 points. He's kind of that even Steven guy that I'm not saying he's going to consistently score 20, but when the question came up early in the program, I think he could very easily score 20.
He averaged 12.04 5-on-5 last year.
I just don't see that increasing.
Well, not increasing, but certainly staying the same.
If that stays the same and the PP time goes down.
Don't you think he gets better, though, a little bit? Like,
he's 20. If he's going to be 25, I mean, this is generally the peak for forwards.
So he might score 30, you're saying?
No. scoring goals is hard in the NHL now. Like, people look at, like, 10 years ago, 20 goals was kind of like the third. Like, you have to score 20 goals to be a decent player. Now, 20, like, even 20 goals is a pretty lofty achievement for guys outside of the top six.
I agree. If you get 30 to 40 points, goals aside, from your third line, you're doing very well.
Anywhere 15 to 20, 17, 18 would be great from Adam Lowry.
I mean, individually, not just the whole line, but yeah. Thanks for the call, Adam. We appreciate it on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Pumper, you're next on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Hey, gentlemen.
Hey.
Got an interesting stat that I just looked up. And, Troy, you know this from Mike Hollins after the Bomber game that I'm not a big Sam Hurl fan, but this past weekend I checked, Alex Singleton has had 35 tackles in his last three games. Mr. Hurl has 7. That gives Alex Singleton 91 on the season and Hurl 41 on the season. And I've called in other shows and stuff asking Mike O'Shea, you know, what is there a chance they may move somebody else in there? And I keep getting the same response of, well, you know, he's in the frame a lot, is, you know, that term. And also that we ask him to do different things. Well, he can't cover backs out of the backfield because he's not as quick. He never gets to the quarterback because he's not as strong. So why don't they look at putting somebody else in there? I know Khalil Bass is rumored to possibly be coming back, and it's a ratio changer, but all you have to do is start Thomas full-time there. What are your guys' thoughts?
It's interesting you bring up the name Alex Singleton, and they were talking about the middle linebackers in that game this weekend, right? You got Singleton and Elamimi in there, and both super high up in tackles. Both in this game, 11 for Singleton, 10 for Elamimi, and I'm right there with you, man. And I think I understand the loyalty, and that right now, that Sam Hurl is perceived to be the best option for middle linebacker for this defense. But I am of the mindset that if you want a good there's not a single strong defense that has ever been on the land in Canada or in the U.S. where the middle linebacker hasn't been like a strong fixture within that defense. And I think there's no question looking forward to next year that's an area you have to improve on. And I think there'll be very strong, serious consideration given to Bass coming in at this point in time in the season.
I was surprised when they let him go. And I knew it was salary and all that, but I really liked Bass last year. Yeah. Is Ian Wild the guy that can do that, at that size?
To me, he's too small.
They tried that.
The last time I remember, was it Baron Simpson the last time they went out and paid for a high, productive, big monster of a middle linebacker?
Well, I guess that's a long time ago, there was another guy that was let go by Wally Bono, but it might
probably
be
him.
Yeah,
too long.
I would have to give some thought or memory as to the middle linebackers prior to that, but certainly he was. You know, Wally Bono got rid of him, and he gave the Bombers a couple of real solid years.
No respect to EJ Qualley. Is that what we're doing here?
Well, there was a lot of penalties.
Those were dark times.
A lot of penalties.
Dark times.
Thanks for the call, Pumper, on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290 if you want to weigh in. By the way, earlier in the NHL news and notes, we talked about Joffrey Leupel's accusation that the Leafs are cheating on the long-term injury reserve list, putting him on there, saying he failed his physical, put out a picture of himself snowboarding on social media and said, I'm ready to go, and then he deleted that. Darren Dreger of TSN, Hockey Insider, just put out this tweet. Bill Daly on Leupel's accusation last night, quote, "We aren't in a position to comment right now. That may or may not change when we know more." So the NHL clearly looking into this situation with the Leafs and Joffrey Leupold.
This, to me, is something that's been going on since pro sport has begun. When you're talking about, I mean, the whole pass your physical thing, man, that's when people get real nervous. I know it's a little bit different as it's constructed with the NHL and such. And I, the second I heard Clark MacArthur, who played, 19 playoff games last year, you heard he failed his physical. And it always makes you go, because the same thing, sometimes you'll play through stuff for 2-3 years, have the same problems, come into the next training camp, and all of a sudden you fail for things that weren't thrown up as red flags in years past. So I'm always skeptical of hearing that he or she fails a physical, and you have to wonder. But the whole cheating that Leupold's, that specific term, to me, when you're utilizing, you know, we've talked about this all last week, right? When you're utilizing rules as they exist and you can bend them and twist them to your favor as an organization, you're silly if you don't do that.
But what if he's, like, good to go and they just don't want him around? They can't trade him because of his salary. And they're just doing this.
Yeah, and to me, I know, like, some people say, "Oh, you're a player. How can you think like this?" As a pawn in a chess game, that's just part of the jungle environment to me in pro sports. That organizations, you're at their mercy more or less, and you know, there's nothing. This isn't illegal. I'm sure. I would. You can bet your fanny that the organization and the doctors involved, if they said he failed his medical, they have something that they can present that would be strong enough to that anyone who's questioning could go, "Yeah, that we understand." Right? There's no way they're exposing themselves medically here.
Well, and if he was truly healthy and could truly play and wanted to, he would file a grievance, right? Like, well, isn't it just as simple as that? Like, if he doesn't file a grievance, then does he have much of a case to stand on?
Yeah, I just don't know what the ramifications for, the whole
salary
thing. Yeah, and all that, as it relates to a guaranteed salary coming your way if you just keep quiet and take the checks.
It sounds to me like it's, at 33, it's that whole, do I risk my 5.2 and sit out a year? Like, if you sit out a year, are you going to get a PTO next year, I guess? And how much damage does it do as a 33-year-old to not play hockey for an entire year?
Well, I'll tell you something, brother. I think it creates considerably more damage when you come out and accuse an organization of cheating. The way pro sports work, you don't come out and speak out against an organization like that.
Like, he's a smart guy. That's what I mean. Who knows? And we're going to find out more as this continues
to evolve.
Well,
he's not that smart, brother, if he already deleted the tweet, right? Like, a mistake.
But that's what I mean. If he's sending that out, doesn't that tell you that there's something to this, that he could play and wants to?
Well,
why
else
would you do that?
There may well be something to it, but that doesn't mean he could play and he wants to. He's fine and dandy. But if the Toronto Maple Leafs have their butts covered and have something medical to give and say this is why he failed his medical, he's screwed. That's just the nature of the business.
I also think that it's taken down clearly because somebody, i.e. his agent, goes, "Joffrey, this isn't going to help the situation or the case we're doing right now." And so it's an interesting story as we go forward. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. If you want to weigh in on the conversation or text us at 1290-90. As we were talking about the Jets and a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day, they host the Minnesota Wild tonight. We do have the lineups for both. Who else are you looking forward to seeing tonight in the lineup for the Jets? And I'll pull up the Wild one here in a second.
Yeah, for me, it's simple. I'm not going to watch any of the savvy vets. They're just going to be, what's the date in October against the Leafs? That's when you start watching the game in a more general sense. For me, exhibition games, I'll always just focus and isolate some of the younger guys. So what does Brendan Lemieux do out there? I'm going to be watching when he's out. Kyle Connor, big time as well, and just because of the storylines involved, someone like Marco Dano is going to have my eye. And then on the back end, you got Stanley and Pullman. Seeing where Tucker Pullman is going to be an interesting watch as well. So there's no shortage of storylines, that's for sure.
And you know what? I'll throw in Patrick Laine's name in there too. because we had our scouted report from Finland earlier and talked about him being a bit big. And he, like, you look at his face and he looks a little bit more chiseled, like a bigger, I don't know how much muscle he put on or anything.
That could
but
be the beard, right?
It could be the beard, but it's not scraggly. Like, he's slowly turned into a bit of a man. But,
take away from the duster.
But, like, an 18-year-old that scored 36 goals last year and not even playing the full 82. Like, what if in this first game there's a noticeable step that he took over the offseason and what that could potentially do for a guy that a lot of people are predicting he could win the Rocket. Like, he could be the NHL's top goal scorer. And if he comes out tonight
and looks
a bit faster, looks a bit bigger, and then gets that spot on the PP, like,
he'll
I don't know.
He'll say, two on the power play, and he'll come out and say, this is why I came to Winnipeg, because the power play sucked, and he'll be done. The second team for the season. On his off wing.
Just to stir it up at training camp, I hope after the game he goes, I'm really hoping to just play second team power play this year. Steve McCulloch and Nicholas Svedberg are your goaltenders for the Minnesota Wild tonight, so no Devan Dubnyk. The lineup looks like this: Charlie Coyle, Mike Riley, Ryan Murphy, Chris Stewart, Marcus Foligno, Cal O'Reilly, Luke Kunin. Ryan Malone is going to be in the lineup tonight, who's trying to make a comeback, I believe, at the ripe old age of 36. Gustav Olofsson, Daniel Winnick, who is on a PTO, will be in the lineup tonight for the Wild. Kyle Quincy, Alex Grant, Kyle Rau, Landon Ferrero, Sam Arras?
Easy for you to say.
Yeah, I'm just trying. Sorry, the print on this is really small. Zach Mitchell, Carson Saucy, Brendan Menel, Tyler Ennis will make his Wild debut. Came over in a trade. And Justin Clues. That's your lineup for the Minnesota Wild. So a couple things there to keep an eye on. And Daniel Winnick trying to make the team. Ryan Malone is real interesting to me.
And for me, I don't care about the Wild. I will not watch the Wild at all in this game. At all. I'll be completely isolated on the young players that I want to target when I'm watching these exhibition games. That's just how I watch them.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I don't. Hey, great. Tyler Ennis has a great camp. Good for him. Doesn't change anything for us here. It's all, and especially with the lineup they're icing too, right? Like, Ennis has basically no help out there because look what they have in the back end and in goal. The Jets should be inside the Minnesota end 65% of this game.
And one thing we've seen, somewhat surprisingly, in preseason, are things get pretty chippy between the Wild and the Jets that just sort of continue to forge that rivalry, the territorial rivalry, right? So don't be surprised if it gets a little bit snarly out there.
Yes, for sure. I would presume a lot of that will happen tonight in preseason action. By the way, it's a four-game week for the Winnipeg Jets. The Wild tonight, the Oilers will be here at Bell MTS Place on Wednesday night. Thursday, they will go to Minnesota. And then Saturday, they'll be in Edmonton. And that'll be the four games this week. Next week, Calgary's here on Monday, Ottawa on Wednesday. And they'll wrap up the preseason in Calgary next Saturday, the 30th of September. And then, gentlemen, it gets started for real. October 4th versus the Leafs, a 6 p.m. start on Wednesday. And then they go to Calgary, Edmonton, Vancouver, come home, host Carolina. And then it gets even tougher with Columbus and Minnesota here.
Can't beat starting against the Leafs. That's just perfecto.
I wonder what we'll talk about. What will we talk about? We'll take a break and find out if you want to talk about anything else on the Boss Pizza fan line. 780-1290 on The Big Show. TSN 1290 next.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show on a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Wild live on TSN 1290 at 7 o'clock. And, of course, full pre- and post-game coverage as well. Back to the Boss Pizza fan line. Steve, you're on the program at 780-1290. Go ahead, sir.
Am I caller number 12?
You today? If you times that by probably 38, you're that caller.
Valiant effort, though.
What do I win then? Not much.
Huh? A hug from the Big Show.
You win free airtime, man.
Group hug.
Okay, well, on a much more serious note, Troy, I want to ask you a question. If you're not comfortable answering it, I totally understand. I watched a documentary on the weekend about Michael Sam. I think you know the linebacker from Missouri that came out. Yeah. Sexual orientation to me, discrimination based on that,
is a huge issue for me. I don't happen to be gay, but if I was, I'd like to think I would be proud of it. I have gay friends, I have gay family members, and I love it.
Yeah.
Can I, okay, this is, I want to frame this right. So you joined in 91, I think, Troy? You came into... Okay. I would bet, and I'm not asking for any names, but back in that day, I'm sure the homophobic slurs, the F word and other stuff was thrown around in locker rooms. I mean, that's just the way it was. I'm not defending it, but my question is, over the time, as time, you know, the new millennium, and moved, did you notice a change for the better, where maybe people were more, you know, cognizant of using such words in the locker room and not making such light of issues like that?
Yeah, I would say absolutely. And I think the F word was long gone before then. The one word that permeates and still does is the, you know, calling people gay and you know, for implying weakness and that sort of thing, right? So that was still around. But you know what, man? And I say this in and feel really like kind of proud and good about it, just because you can be involved with different individuals or groups of people where an open-mindedness isn't prevalent. But for sure, the Canadians, like, and there is a separation, right? Like the Canadian guys, typically, if I can generalize, are somewhat different than the Americans coming up, and especially, say, from the South, where there's just some of the guys had real strong feelings whenever the subject would come up about homosexuality. And what I found was it was guys who had real strong Southern Christian type of upbringings. They had some very strong words and spoke out strongly against it. Where the vast majority of Canadian guys, everyone that I can ever recall, I never hear anyone taking a strong – can't recall anyone ever taking a strong stance in a negative way about it ever, or are totally open-minded with it. So it was something every once in a while the subject would come up in the locker room, and you know there would be a smaller group that would have strong feelings against. Like if anyone ever came out, there would have been maybe some guys in that locker room that had a problem with it. But I would say that to my knowledge, they would have been American and typically from the South a little bit, if I may say that. But by and large, the Canadian guys are always real open-minded to it. And definitely as time went on, like those – the same social conversations that happen in the general public, just out in society amongst your buddies, the same sort of things are discussed in the locker room and even like serious conversations about having being more open-minded, accepting, all those sorts of things.
What's the name of the documentary, Steve?
Steve's
long gone.
Oh, yeah. Steve's gone. Just tweet that at us at Jim Till Sports or at Troy West or at Brandon underscore Wiki. I'm a big fan of the sports.
Good question, though, man.
You know, yeah. It is a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN 1290 as it all gets started tonight, the first of 7 preseason games. We will have the Manitoba Building Trades pregame show live from Boston Pizza City Place at 6 o'clock. Jets and Wild with Paul Edmonds and Brian Munns at 7 o'clock. And then the Huron Windows postgame show from BP City Place again with Mr. Kevin Oshevsky and crew. Of course, Don Vito Roundtable at 11. We'll have the latest after the pregame skates. And then the afternoon ride with Huss and Rick Ralph at 3. Gondola Pizza warm-up with Hustler is at 2 o'clock. Thank you for listening. We'll break it all down for you tomorrow and lots more to come as the Bombers return to practice as well. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and myself, Jim Toth, we'll do it all again tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. on The Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.